where you broadcast back at the time it happened.
I know somebody who actually went and did 250 pounds of laundry.
Wow.
She went down there with a car, and the folks took the dirty laundry and...
God, what a hangover. What a hangover she must have had the next day.
What a hangover, yes, indeed. And as for people, you know, I had this fear
she took it to a laundromat.
That there would, you know, that the space would be a... because I'm so fastidious. The space would be a, how should I say, a sanitary apocalypse. It is not. I was there on the way to work tonight.
And they're watering the plants? You know,
they're taking really good care of the Zuccotti Park.
The company that owns that park, they're saving a lot of money on upkeep of the plants and stuff.
They sweep every night, and I was reading, you know, one of the blogs of the folks down at the park. They scrub the grounds. You know, with brushes, you know, they're being very conscientious. Yes, there's trouble. Yes, there's a bleep hole. Yes, it's attract, you know, predatory characters. But, you know, so far, so good. You know, everything seems to be going. Yes, I'm highly biased because, after the last election where, you know, I gave the system one more chance and found myself idealistic about someone being, you know, maybe we could elect a good person and this person would inspire all of us to find our better angels, and come to find out he's just another politician. Not a bad man, but just another politician.
I was hedging my bets, because when Rebecca Miles was asking various producers what they thought of the election.
The Obama election.
Yeah, the Obama election. Yeah. My comment was, I'm waiting for Copenhagen. Yeah. Right, if the U.S. has a good role in Copenhagen, you know, then I'll
explain Copenhagen.
That was an environmental conference, international environmental conference. Mm-hmm. And if the United States participated in an international environmental conference in a positive way, then I'd say we have a really bright future. And if they do what has been done always, then it's a bad future and ended up being a bad future. So, I mean, I was hedging my bets then because I realized that I looked upon Copenhagen as a turning point. But I saw a march today. A bunch of the kids from Occupy Wall Street marched down William Street and crossed Wall Street. So I saw it on my way here at a little before 6. And the people coming out of the buildings on Wall Street are watching this. And their expressions just ran the gamut. Some of them really enjoyed watching the march. Some of them were disgusted. Some of them were angry. Some of them even looked ashamed, which I thought was the most interesting.
Really ashamed.
You know, they were sort of looking down and kind of sheepish, like, "Oh my God, you know, this is they're complaining about me or my job." So it was a lot of different reactions.
Well, you know, we're all human beings. Everybody on all sides of this, we're all just people, and nobody is born saying, "I'm going to be Scrooge. I'm going to be evil. I'm going." They find themselves in positions, you know, and say, "Okay, this will work for me. This the system says this. Do this. I will do this." Sometimes it works, and sometimes it does. Those who ended up in the 1% are saying, "Wow, holy mackerel!" And the other 99%, another matter, you know. So. Like the Dalai Lama said, try to think the best of everybody, regardless. It's conceivable that that 1% knows this was wrong. And they were just riding this train. I wonder when this train is going to stop. And some of them might be saying, this train's going to stop, you know. And maybe the wisest of them, you know, will, in the spirit of the truth and reconciliation, try to make amends or try to shift things around. But human nature being what it is, they may stonewall it and fight it. It's difficult. It's a difficult moral thing.
About 10 years ago, a friend of mine was taking some sort of business course at Pace College. Mm. And the teacher told everybody that because of the widening disparity between the haves and have-nots, that there was going to be a revolution. And the point of this course is to make sure that, one, you're part of the haves and not the have-nots, and two, how to prepare you for that upcoming revolution and push it back as far as possible because it's going to happen. And I thought, what an interesting thing for a college professor to tell their kids.
My heavens. Okay, it's midnight. It's almost time for Earthwatch with Robert Knight. And we have a bit of Bach before we do that.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
And thank you for supporting this listener-sponsored institution, WBAI Radio, in New York, entering its 52nd year.
Greetings once more. This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York, Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 and streaming at WBAI.org. My name is Robert Knight, and the program is Earthwatch. And tonight, we commemorate the 12th of October, a day that for many people will live in infamy. Not to the detriment of our Italian friends, colleagues, lovers, and interlocutors, but because of the current European context of the knowledge of this hemisphere. While the great accomplishments of the Italian people are well celebrated, the scandalous, vicious, racist, and uniquely cruel behaviors of Cristobal Colon resonate throughout the unhappy halls of history. And in this edition of Earthwatch, we intend to apply some historical correctives in regard to that, and at the same time support this radio station that dares do such adventurous investigation. Accordingly, I'd like to thank Sydney and Ken for the improvisational miscellany leading up to this program, and advise you that tonight, because it is still in the soul, the 12th of October, the anniversary of the arrival of a confused traveler named Christopher Columbus, who landed in the Bahamas on that day in 1492, thinking it was India, never even made it to the continent of North America, but thought not only that he missed that, but he thought that the island that he hit was India. So that is the least of the cavils. The greatest is one of the greatest cruelties in recorded history. With the, and here we go beyond ethnocide, literally the genocide of the Taino Arawaks of the islands, and the invention of, as far as we know, prior unthinkable cruelties. And because it is still the 12th of October in our soul, we are hoping to use the historical mission of BAI and the Pacifica Foundation to explicate, document that. That is our mission. That's what we're here to do. And those of you listening, I beseech you to support this kind of work through many forms, but tonight through the documentary about all of that, from Columbus to De las Casas to Napoleon, Leclerc, Jefferson, and the hidden history that our children need to know in order to be better in future ways. And as we begin this edition of Earthwatch, I am hoping that you will say that this program and those kinds of investigations are important. This is our fund fall drive, in which BAI must have enough finance and support, operational expenses and such, that we can be here for the long haul, for when the bleep hits the fan at Occupy, when yet another fake war over a so-called conspiracy that would use guns from Mexico that the Attorney General let go down there in order to kill a Saudi ambassador by the impossibly dumb representations of the Iranian government, you know. The conspiracies just keep on coming, but in most American media, what is not covered is the true conspiracies of finance and race. The Wall Street occupiers are on to part of that, But there's more, and there's deeper history that we feel it is our responsibility to explore. So tonight, I'm hoping that in the first hour of this program, you will be sufficiently committed to that mission to call us up at 212-209-2950 and pledge your tax-deductible support, because tonight, because it is Columbus Day, we are offering a book that is so important and yet so rare. You can't find it in bookstores today. I know, because as the producer of a premium called The Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti, it took a lot of doing to find extant print copies of this book called A Brief Account of the Destruction of the Indies by Bartolomé de las Casas. We're offering that. We have some copies in stock because of some work we did before. For tax-deductible pledge of $50, which gets you membership and all the other privileges and attributes thereof. And for $60, we're offering you a two-hour documentary about the history of Christopher Columbus, the real one. For $60, Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti. And we're going to start the clock in a few minutes. And I'm hoping for a few thousand dollars in support of not only the historical mission to explore the divisions among cultures and peoples, but to understand history and find a way that we all might be living properly together with each other. So in that spirit, for those of you who understand that we take such things seriously, you might already begin calling 212-209-2950. We've got maybe a half dozen people here. Ken, I think, is at the tally desk. Ken Gale. Sydney Smith is engineering. Tony Ryan is also in the station. And we have several volunteers. And I'm hoping that you'll be making your calls early. Sweet Science of Racism, 2-CD documentary set for $60. And the book, a physically printed book called A Brief Account of the Destruction of the Indies by Bartolomé de las Casas. That's available for a $50 pledge of support to BAI. $100 gets you three things, the book and both CDs. So with that initial notification, let us begin, as we were speaking during the prior miscellany, about the lovely beauty of the children and how our historical responsibility is to give them information and then to watch their beauty unfold in redressing the injustice. So let us now begin with this from a wonderful event that I and Ken and Kathy Davis and Grayson Challenger and some other people from BAI were at Beth Lamont's estate in Ossining, New York, a peace festival for the organization Volunteers for Peace, produced by Andrew Bell. And we begin with a salute, a tribute to the children who will save our asses in the end, okay? So this is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York, but only because we love them enough to teach our children well. And here now, a moment of that event, this from the Rivertown Kids performing this Sunday.
One blue sky above us, one ocean lapping all our shores, one earth so green and round.
Who could ask for more?
Who could ask for more?
And because I love you.
And because I love you.
I'll give it one more try.
I'll give it one more try.
Show my rainbow race.
The Rivertown Kids, isn't that great? They were performing this weekend at a festival and conference for Volunteers for Peace, about which more in future broadcasts. But the Rivertown Kids, the children you heard singing, included Chris Richards, Gabe O'Reilly, Kirsten Lutterly, A.J. Lucan, Elise Fox, Luisa Uribe, Sebastian Uribe, John Garrison, Anastasia Laguerre, Chris Thomas, Lily Kirshner, Molly Robinson, and Marisa Murges. And the accompanists were Dan Einbender and Travis Jeffery. And the Rivertown Kids are directed by Dan and by Terry Udell. So that is part of our acknowledgement to our juniors. We usually begin with an appreciation of elders, but children too can lead us. Like these children from the South Bronx, with whom we spoke during the production of our premium tonight, The Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti. The history and hopes of the Haitian people have been an inspiration, not only to their own nation, but to freedom-seeking people around the world. Their triumphs and inspiration belong to us all, and not only the students of history, but as well, students of the future, such as these children from PS 64 in the South Bronx of New York City, who recently rallied for Haiti following the devastating earthquake of 2010.
Tell me, what's this walk about?
For Haiti.
Why are you doing it?
So that way Haiti can have help and rebuild all of its beauty.
Did people help you?
Yes.
Haiti's the best.
We have to help Haiti a lot because they need help.
Yeah, why do they need help?
Because they got an earthquake and it damaged everything
in their country.
You know what's happening now?
I think they're trying to help Haiti, like, to get money and they're getting band-aids
and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they're gonna cut.
Well, that's very beautiful.
We're going to come on news.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I work at WBAI.
Yeah.
Yeah, you heard of it? You raised a lot of money?
Yep. Over $11,000.
That's wonderful.
I donated money. I donated $10 to Haiti.
Why'd you do that?
So Haiti can have more fortunate.
Today we're helping raise money for Partners in Health, which is an organization that helps Haiti. And they've been there for 20 years.
What are the groups?
The New Settlement After School Program at PS 64. Together as an organization, we raised over $11,000 for the fund. And we have almost about 300 students within our after school program here with us.
You have been listening to The Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti, an Earthwatch documentary special produced for WBAI Pacifica Radio by Robert Knight.
Où sont les enfants? Two different groups of children. One from up in Westchester at the event of the Volunteers for Peace, produced by Andrew Bell, in which your host had a few words to say, along with many other great people from the station. And this is Earthwatch on WBAI. I'm Robert Knight, and tonight we are asking you to support this radio station and this program by learning the true history of Columbus Day, October 12th. We are offering as a premium a very special award-nominated documentary that was produced here by your host over the past year that... it's called The Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti. It's a pun on the pugilism of the European colonialists and slave gatherers, as well as the sugarcane industry that was part of the plantation abuse and annihilation of the indigenous Indians, and the beginning of the import of African slaves after the havoc wreaked by Christopher Columbus and his son, Diego Colón, who started the importation of African slaves in 1505 into this continent. This is a handcrafted documentary that's about 2 hours long that goes into neglected documents of history, including a recently discovered version of Napoleon Bonaparte's message to his brother-in-law, Admiral Leclerc, one of 15 generals and admirals that would be killed in the Haitian uprising, the first and only such successful one leading to the formation of the country in 1804. It includes... an extraordinary audio encounter of the French leader during a scary few minutes long visit or few hours long visit to Haiti. It includes the real statements made by Thomas Jefferson in regard to his attitude about people of color, slavery and such, and the export of freedom. And it includes some extensive readings from a book we're offering you for a pledge of $50, A Brief Account of the Destruction of the Indies by Bartolomé de las Casas, an interesting man who, at the age of 18, was one of the early conquistadores of the Caribbean, and who, over age and time, began to see for what it was. He was, even though he became a priest after being one of Columbus's soldiers, he was denied the Holy Eucharist sacrament because of his, at that young age, participation and unconsciousness about the cruelty of genocide and slavery. And yet he grew. And eventually became one of the most vociferous opponents to that. He even ultimately outgrew his relationship to the importation of African slaves to replace the, I say Indian, okay. I will not retroactively name people like the Taino and so on as African-American. You know, I will not name them after Vespucci because they have so many names and cultures of their own. But those who are indigenous to this continent still use that term, so I'm not being intentionally offensive here, nor inaccurate. But tonight... because it is still the 12th of October, we're offering a $100 package with the rare, out-of-print, hard-to-find book, A Brief Account of the Destruction of the Indies by Bartolomé de las Casas. This will curl your toes, it will chill your spine, it will make you work harder, even more, for the mission of Pacifica and that of racial and cultural and national equity. Also, the two-hour acoustic documentary that has already been used in some schools as a historical teaching aid, The Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti. You can have both of these things with a call right now to area code 212-209-2950. WBAI, if you're among the many people who've joined us over the past year or so, is a non-commercial radio station that depends directly on the listeners. That's why we don't have to interrupt the information with commercial BS. And this program is part of a rare and precious species of broadcast originated at WBAI called Freeform Live Radio. And we're asking you to put us on the map tonight and indicate that that to which you tune every Wednesday at midnight is something sustainable. So let's take a few minutes. I want to play some samples from the documentary, but we need to get on the map here. The phone number is 212-209-2950. I'd like for us to get all of this done in the first hour so we can take your live on-air phone calls later in this program. But first, we need those of you who are committed to the principles of equity, justice, and historical understanding to which we've alluded to call us at 212-209-2950. Who will be the first one to do that, please? Area code 212-209-2950. No, seriously, folks, we need about a dozen of you to join us at this time. And we have, I think, three or four, the last time I took a look, volunteers in the back room. Let's, while you are vertical, conscious, and committed, please make that phone call now. It would mean so much. It would mean a lot, not only to those back here, back there, in our volunteer room, listeners like you, but it would also encourage a spirit of challenge, a spirit of justice that characterizes this radio station. Who will join us now at this time? 212-209-2950, area code 212. I'm not sure of the engineering here. I don't know where the particular patch is for hearing the phone calls ring. But I see a tally that has not been updated. Possibly it's because there are phone calls in progress. I do not know. But I know that I need more of an indication than this. Please give this call, 212-209-2950, area code 212. Thank you. I think I saw a flash there. Somebody's calling in. Get the whole package for $100 because it's going to be a long time. You know, they had to specially print these books up because there was such a demand. You know, this Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti is one of the most popular locally produced, independently BAI produced premiums in many years. And despite the fact that I was there when it happened, it really is worth it. Because the documentary information is in it so that you can travel with it in your car, with your iPod, with your earphones in the subway. And the sobriety of it, as well as the musical interconnections and the historical linkages, it's a unique experience. I guess it's an offshoot of Freeform, plus one's own background in news and documentary production and so on. But we need more calls, 212-209-2950. Area code 212, please help us get off to a good start. Want to move this quickly, make a couple of thousand bucks for BAI, and then you know, have enough time left over in tonight's program for conversations with you live about this, that, or whatever thing. Who will be the next one to call us? I think maybe we got a call or two, but I they keep changing the settings here, so I don't know how to, you know, thrill you by hearing the phone ring or anything, but please give this call. Blind faith in BAI and in particular in this program. 212-209-2950. 209-2950. We're offering the 2-hour documentary, and it really runs the gamut. From the pre-Columbian, Taino, Arawak, Haiti, and all of this, to excruciating descriptions of the actual cruelties that were enacted, and then the triumph of the Haitian people over this. And it's a story that is, as mediocre journalists like to say, well, the story is told through the people of Haiti. You know, like those newscasts that saying, so-and-so lives in a hovel in the edge of town, only a mile from the skyscrapers whose glory they may never achieve. Blah, 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 blah. Well, no, we don't try to personalize important historical facts into negligence through encapsulating them in one individual. We try to tell the sweeping story of a great people, the Maroons, the natives, who, despite all odds, overcame these powerful invaders from Europe and became an inspiration to the whole world. 212-209-2950, $100. Haiti, The Sweet Science of Racism, a 2-hour, 2-CD set, plus De Las Casas' rare book. You know, it's not in print. It really took us some time to track down a publisher who could provide. Hear that? We have them here. They're in stock. They're ready to go. 212-209-2950. And I'm asking friends of Earthwatch to call and pledge for both things, the book and the double CD set, because there are so many things in the book that I could not, you know, economically afford to include in the documentary. So this is the one and only chance of which I'm aware this year to get this material, which is all the more important because, you know, last Friday, the Haitians marched across the Brooklyn Bridge to support the Occupy Wall Street. And it was like strangers getting to know each other. Of course, we interviewed the organizers on 5 o'clock shadow days before that event happened. But this is part of the kind of stream of consciousness that I'm so proud to be a part of, and that smart listeners like you, though as far as I know reluctant, I don't know how many people have been calling yet. So 212-209-2950, but I'm not seeing the little adding machine tally advancing. It could be tally lag. I don't know. But for $60, the 2-CD extraordinary documentary, if I say so myself, because it involves so many unreported points of history. I got smart producing it. And it's something you can share with your children. That's why we opened the program with two different sets of kids, one of, I guess, of many hues of color from PS64 in the Bronx. And before that, the excellent musical kids from the Rivertown Singers. 212-209-2950. Would it help if I gave you a sample of the program? Would that inspire you to call during this sample? I'm going to try and trust you for that. How about that? Because this may give you some idea of what is available to you for a pledge of hopefully $100 to get the documentary and the book. But the documentary is $60, the book is $50, to make sure BAI can be here when it counts. And that this program will be here as we live into the future. Here's a sample of what's available to you with a phone call. Make a note, please, and when you hear something that breaks your heart or inspires you into defiance, make a note and please call us. I'll go back and check, maybe answer some phones myself. But this is a sample of The Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti. This is Earthwatch on WBAI.
The history and hopes of the Haitian people have been an inspiration, not only to their own nation, but to...
Sorry, that's the part we just heard. Here we go.
Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs.
You are listening to The Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti, an Earthwatch documentary special produced by your host, Robert Knight, Senior National Correspondent at WBAI in New York, Pacifica, Radio for a Change.
Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind.
In the afternoon of January 12, 2010, on the western third of the Caribbean island now known as Hispaniola, the nation of Haiti endured a devastating earthquake of Richter magnitude 7. The quake leveled homes, offices, shelters, and even the presidential palace, taking with it the souls of as many as 250,000 Haitians. Tens of thousands more impoverished earthquake victims who had migrated to the capital for economic reasons were, once again, displaced to the ecologically devastated countryside, fleeing potential mudslides that were threatened by spring rains. Months later, as Haiti struggled to recover, the nation, created in 1804 by the world's first successful African slave revolt, found itself still under military occupation by the United Nations, political domination by the United States, and economic domination by an industrial relief agenda that critics see as a banana for foreign investors, with high profit and low-wage assembly plants for products destined for the international market. Throughout the crisis, most of the American media repeatedly tagged their reports with the unexamined mantra that Haiti is the hemisphere's poorest nation. Most reports ignored the fundamental context of centuries of invasion, occupation, and subversion by Europe, Spain, France, and the United States. They ignored the legacy of restrictive export policies and substandard wages for subsistence workers. Also absent from most American media was significant analysis of the crippling reparations that African heritage Haitians were forced to pay France for their own manumission against colonial plantation slavery. They neglected to mention United States military occupation from 1915 to 1934 and the repeated installation of friendly dictators. There was no examination of the persistently race-based foreign policy of the United States, whose historical leaders feared that Haitians would export freedom to their black peers on the southern shores of North America during the 19th century. As the most recent geological disaster developed, your producer wondered why these details were missing from the popular American narrative on Haiti. How a nation that once provided half the world's coffee and sugarcane could be reduced to such poverty, and what really happened to the indigenous people who preceded the African slaves, the Arawak, Taino, and Carib people who first named the island and the sea surrounding it. Thus, this program is dedicated to the people of Haiti, whose real story is ultimately more one of triumph than of tragedy.
Haïti, c'est histoire. Haïti, c'est histoire pau. Haïti, c'est histoire. En nous lever pour Haïti. En nous mobiliser pour Haïti. Tout le monde ensemble pour Haïti. Fait qu'on parle pour Haïti. En nous kebela.
We begin our exploration of Haiti's early history with an excerpt from the late historian Howard Zinn's seminal textbook, A People's History of the United States. In this section, he describes the December 5, 1492 encounter between the European colonial explorer Christopher Columbus and the Taino natives of the island that he called Española after his Spanish backers, but whose original Arawak name, inspired by its western mountains, was Haiti. Arawak men and women, naked, tawny, and full of wonder, emerged from their villages onto the island's beaches and swam out to get a closer look at the strange big boat. When Columbus and his sailors came ashore, carrying swords, speaking oddly, the Arawaks ran to greet them, brought them food, water, gets. He later wrote of this in his log. They were well built, with good bodies and handsome features. They have no iron. Their spears are made of cane. They would make fine servants. As soon as I arrived in the Indies, on the first island which I found, I took some of the natives by force, in order that they might learn, and might give me information of whatever there is in these parts, end quote. The information that Columbus wanted most was, where is the gold? Columbus concluded his report by asking for a little help from their majesties, and in return he would bring them from his next voyage, quote, as much gold as they need and as many slaves as they ask. They went from island to island in the Caribbean, taking Indians as captives. A report of the year 1650 shows none of the original Arawaks or their descendants left on the island.
As the African slave trade grew in the Americas, Spain's grip on the gateway island of Hispaniola was challenged by the continual 17th century raids of French buccaneers. Aided by English and Portuguese pirates of the Caribbean's Windward Passage, the heavily armed French boucaniers eventually seized control of the western third of Hispaniola. Spain and France fought for the territory until the Ryswick Treaty of 1697, when it was ceded to France and renamed Saint-Domingue. During the Parisian ascendancy, the colony produced half of Europe's coffee, sugar, tobacco, and indigo, and prospered from the actuarial expertise of French accountants, who precisely calculated the work capacity and life expectancy of African slaves down to the franc and to the month. One of those former slaves was a Haitian revolutionary leader named Henri Christophe, who described the similarities between the Spanish treatment of so-called Indians and the French treatment of African slaves. Quoting, have they not hung up men with heads downward and drowned them in sacks, crucified them on planks, buried them alive, crushed them in mortars? Have they not forced them to consume feces? And having flayed them with the lash, have they not cast them alive to be devoured by worms, or onto anthills, or lashed them to stakes in the swamp to be devoured by mosquitoes? Have they not thrown them into boiling cauldrons of cane syrup? Have they not put men and women inside barrels studded with spikes and rolled them down mountainsides into the abyss? Have they not consigned these miserable blacks to man-eating dogs until the latter, sated by human flesh, left the mangled victims to be finished off with bayonet and poniard? End quote. By the end of the 18th century, a white French contingent of 32,000 settlers dominated nearly a million African slaves. Between 1783 and 1791, with 800,000 slaves already abducted to Haiti, a full third of the ongoing Atlantic slave trade was destined for Saint-Domingue. In 1791, 2 years after the French Revolution, the black slaves and so-called gens de couleur of Haiti began a rebellion, whose goal of slave liberation echoed the Parisian cries of liberté, égalité, fraternité. They took to the hills, as had the Arawaks and Tainos before them, taking the name of Maroons, short for the Spanish word meaning the mountains. Some 4,000 Maroons were trained in guerrilla tactics and led by Toussaint Louverture, a freedman who fought with the Spanish against France in hopes of ending slavery, then rejoined the French army in 1794. By 1798, Louverture had repulsed British invaders who had also been at war with France, and emboldened by the victories of his lieutenants, Henri Christophe and Jean-Jacques Dessalines, Louverture conquered Santo Domingo in January 1801. He freed the slaves and announced a new constitution that declared, quote, there cannot exist slaves in Saint-Domingue. Servitude is therein forever abolished. In part one, we considered the Colombian colonialism of cruelty resulting in Spain's genocide of the Arawak, Taino, and Carib natives of the island of Haiti, which would then come to be known as Hispaniola. We covered the importation of African slaves to replace the so-called Indians and the first and only successful African slave rebellion, resulting in colonial independence from France. Part one culminated with the dispatch by the French First Consul, Napoleon Bonaparte, of a war fleet to the place that would become his first Waterloo. Napoleon was defeated by the Afro-Haitian rebels under the inspired leadership of Toussaint Louverture. France lost 50,000 soldiers, including 18 generals, in the conflict. Although the liberationist Toussaint prevailed over the slavery reimposing Napoleon, Louverture was nevertheless captured by subterfuge, shackled, and abducted to Paris, where he spent his final days imprisoned, deprived, and possibly poisoned, until his death in 1803 in the prison citadel known as Fort Lejeune, where his corpse was nibbled by rats. But Louverture had prophetically proclaimed that, quote, "In overthrowing me, you have cut down in Saint-Domingue only the trunk of the tree of liberty. It will spring up again from the roots, for they are many and they are deep." Ironically, in the end, it was Louverture who had the last laugh on Bonaparte. The exiled Haitian named Toussaint from an island in the Atlantic may have died in France, but a Frenchman named Napoleon also died in exile on an African island in the Atlantic. The Haitian defeat of Napoleon's armada to the Americas was of profound benefit to two nations.
This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. That's a condensed sample of a two-hour documentary called The Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti. That's available to a pledge of $60. And also, we have the rare, usually out-of-print book called A Brief Account of the Destruction of the Indies by Dominican priest Bartolome de las Casas. That's $50. 212-209-2950 is the number. We only have one or two volunteers in the back room. This is why I'm pausing for a moment so that we might get two calls, hopefully to get both things, so that you can support WBAI, Earthwatch, and Human Freedom. So let's just pause for a minute or two for you to take this moment. The earlier we do this, the better, because, you know, people go to sleep and so on and so forth. So let's give our brave volunteers a couple of pledge calls, hopefully at the full amount for $100 for the book and the documentary, because it's not easy to go and find it. 212-209-2950. We're going to stand by looking for indications of those phone calls. 212-209-2950. Even if you're streaming from out of town, make it a long-distance call, because you know you like to be here. This is WBAI. I'm Robert Knight. This is Earthwatch. 212-209-2950, area code 212. I think the phones are open at the moment, and we can take two or, you know, maybe three or four calls if you can stand by and hold on for a moment. I want you to hear more of this, and after we finish this, you know, this quick summary of the overall documentary, I want to go into some detail from the De Las Casas book. It will reinforce and reinvigorate your sense of justice. Okay, there's one of them. All right, somebody else, one or two more people, give us a call right now. We have, I think, two volunteers and maybe the tally. Area code 212-209-2950. I want to continue with this, but we also have a responsibility to invoke or catalyze you into supporting this station and, incidentally, this program called Earthwatch. 212-209-2950, area code 212-209-2950. I don't have those little acoustic cues to give you the Pavlovian ringing of the bells, but somebody else, please call us now, and as soon as you do that, you'll release the flow of the content for everybody else. 212-209-2950, you can be a hero. Waiting for that call. Seriously, it really comes down to you, whoever will be the next one. 209-2950, this book is out of print. It's rare. We had to go through an investigative procedure just to find anybody who had copies of them stocked up. I think for BAI, they had to reprint some. And what we've done here with this over the past year, the you know, the truth about Columbus Day and Haiti as an emblem for slavery and colonialism. What we did was so hot that even our sister station, KPFA, wanted to join in on our resources with that. So, you know, this is kind of important, folks. 212-209-2950. Who's going to be the next caller? If there's no one listening, might as well go home, you know. Please, somebody show up. Give some faith. The minute that pledge is in progress, we'll continue with the condensed version of the program and go on to some of the specificities of this, of the revelations in this extraordinary book of history. And it will change your relationship to people of the continent and indigenous people of this continent. Who's going to make that call? Please, please, somebody who's inclined, help us out and make that call now. 212-209-2950. WBAI is part of the Pacifica Foundation and Radio Network, and it is committed to exploring the truth, the division among peoples, the roots of racism, the horrible penalties that come from the division of people. So somebody, one more person, please make that call, 212-209-2950. This is intelligent radio. This is moral radio. This is radio that gives you the edge in your conversations with others. And I guess that really is the product that you're protecting if you so choose to do. 212-209-2950. This is not like a boo-hoo. You know, some people make an old boo-hoo. Well, it's, you know, some slaves and blah, 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 blah. This is not a story of tragedy. It's a story of triumph from the most horrible conditions possible. And the leadership in global independence of the people who overcame the Colombian establishment of slavery in this hemisphere. 212-209-2950. Time is short. We've almost exhausted the first hour, so I'm going to hope that you will behave with honor with calls to 212-209-2950. A pledge of $100, which is barely a dinner for two, and way less than it costs you to buy a newspaper each day, to support BAI for a year and be involved in the processes here. 212-209-2950. Here's more. This is really sort of like a flash through history so that we can get to, you know, what's in the De Las Casas book. I'm going to put you on your faith. We need one more call, 212-209-2950, to support Earthwatch.
The Declaration of Haitian Independence in 1804, but it also made possible the single greatest territorial expansion of the recently formed United States of America. Haiti's victory over France enabled President Thomas Jefferson's greatest accomplishment, the Louisiana Purchase, which doubled the landmass of the United States. Napoleon Bonaparte's failure to conquer and re-enslave Haiti in 1801 meant the loss of lucrative sugar revenues from the slave plantations of Saint-Domingue and the devaluing of the French-claimed strategic city of New Orleans in the Mexican Gulf at the foot of the Mississippi River. Pressed to prepare for war with Great Britain, Napoleon tried to cut his losses with the offer to sell to the United States the city of New Orleans along with the huge French territory west of the Mississippi, stretching all the way to the Rocky Mountains. With the signing of the Louisiana Purchase on May 2, 1803, Jefferson obtained the port city, freedom of transit and commerce on the Mississippi, and 829,000 square miles of land for $15 million at the rock-bottom price of 3 cents an acre. As W.E.B. Du Bois observed in his thesis on Suppression of the African Slave Trade to the United States of America, 1638 to 1870, Quoting, "The role which the great Negro Toussaint called L'Ouverture played in the history of the United States has seldom been fully appreciated. Representing the age of revolution in America, he rose to leadership through a bloody terror, which contrived a Negro problem for the Western Hemisphere, intensified and defined the anti-slavery movement, became one of the causes, and probably the prime one, which led Napoleon to sell Louisiana for a song, and through the interworking of all of these effects, rendered more certain the final prohibition of the slave trade by the United States in 1807. Despite Jefferson's geostrategic debt to Haiti and his eloquence for American freedom, his attitude to the African heritage freedom-seeking people of Haiti was hostile and subject to the racial bigotry of his day. As the slave rebellion grew in the 1790s, Jefferson called the freedom movement in Saint-Domingue, quote, a dangerous fermentation. In 1801, Jefferson even offered to support Napoleon's attack on Toussaint Louverture and attempted re-enslavement of Haiti. Jefferson did not reverse his counter-revolutionary position on Haiti until the following year, when he discovered that Napoleon intended to use Haiti, or Saint-Domingue, as a beachhead for colonizing the entire Western Hemisphere. Still, Jefferson's continuing antipathy to Afro-Haitians was revealed in his reference to them as cannibals of that terrible republic. Quote, Jefferson declared that people of color are, quote, by their habits rendered as incapable as children of taking care of themselves and are extinguished promptly whenever industry is necessary for raising young. In the meantime, they are pests in society by their idleness and the depredations to which this leads them. Their amalgamation with the other color produces a degradation which no lover of his country, no lover of excellence in the human character can innocently consent." End quote, Thomas Jefferson.
Rejoice, Columbia sons, rejoice, to tyrants never bend the knee. Join with heart, with soul and voice for Jefferson and liberty.
There was yet one more surprise waiting for Haiti on the 17th of February 2010, when, for the first time after two centuries, the former colony was visited by a French head of state in the person of Nicolas Sarkozy. History does not record his thoughts, whether he rued the francophobic fervor of the recently discovered Haitian Declaration of Independence, whether he feared garnishment of Haiti's reparations for freedom to France that bankrupted the new nation for a century and a half, or whether he had urgent legal reasons to flee the jurisdiction. What is known is that Sarkozy spent only 5 hours in Haiti, and those under heavily armed guard.
Beyond the urgent need to help this country which is so dear to us, my presence in Haiti, the first of a French head of state since independence, has a particular resonance. In my mind, it is not only about turning our backs on the past, that of a rich but painful common history. Let us not hide from the fact that our presence here hasn't left just good memories.
Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more.
Despite the obstacles of bigotry and poverty, the history and hopes of the Haitian people have been an inspiration, not only to their own nation, but to freedom-seeking people around the world. Their triumphs and inspiration belong to us all, and not only the students of history, but as well, students of the future, such as these children from PS 64 in the South Bronx of New York City, who recently rallied for Haiti following the devastating earthquake of 2010.
Tell me, what's this walk about?
For Haiti.
Why are you doing it?
So that way Haiti can have help and rebuild all of its beauty.
Did people help you?
Yes.
Yeah. Haiti's the best.
We have to help Haiti a lot because they need help.
Yeah, why do they need help?
Because they got an earthquake and it damaged everything in their country.
Do you know what's happening now?
I think they're trying to help Haiti, like, to get money
and start building mayonnaise and stuff.
Uh-huh.
We're going to come on news.
Well, that's very beautiful.
We're going to come on news.
Yeah. Yeah, I work at WBAI.
Yeah.
Yeah, you heard of it? You raised a lot of money?
Yep. Over $11,000.
That's wonderful.
I donated money. I donated donated $10 to Haiti.
Why'd you do that?
So Haiti can have more fortunate.
Today we're helping raise money for Partners in Health, which is an organization that helps Haiti. And they've been there for 20 years.
What are the groups?
The New Settlement After School Program at Pier 64. Together as an organization, we raised over $11,000 for the fund. And we have almost about 300 students within our after school program here with us. Who sont les enfants?
You have been listening to The Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti, an Earthwatch documentary special produced for WBAI Pacifica Radio by Robert Knight.
And this is Earthwatch, live on this Columbus Day. We are offering you this two-hour documentary for $100, including the book, Bartolome de las Casas's brief account of the destruction of the Indies. And the book is 50, the documentary is 60, but get them both for $100. We now have an opening in the phone lines, and I want to go deeper into this rare out-of-print book. 212-209-2950. When I see the indication of two or three people calling, we'll get right into that. But please, make a call now. I want to pause briefly. We're coming to the top of the hour, and time is short. And I want to leave a good record, because this is something that represents a number of things. The rejuvenation of independent original production here at WBAI. For many years, that was neglected. And we're back in the saddle, not only doing the kind of radio that you have for 51 years supported, but we're also inspiring other stations. KPFA has picked up on our lead on this particular issue, particularly on this Columbus Day. So the phones are open, 212-209-2950. Am I here alone tonight? 209-2950. Please, we want to leave a good record in the morning that people care. You see, this history is an antidote to the disempowerment of the hopes of people of color, because it's a story of triumph. 209-2950. Imagine that at your PTA or at your church gathering or other social, holiday gathering, that you're able to have the new generation understand the greatness of their ancestors. Who's going to make that call? 212-209-2950. It is top of the hour right now, and we've only got a few minutes left. Please make that call now. Show that truth in history matters. And I am prepared to go straight to, there's so much more in the documentary, including the Haitian Declaration of Independence, the anthem, and an analysis of the intervention of Bill Clinton and George Bush and the diversion of funds to support Haiti. 212-209-2950. Somebody, please make that call. Let us know that it's worthwhile to do this. Otherwise, we could just play some Muzak or something. Waiting for an Earthwatch lover to demonstrate commitment. 212-209-2950. Area code 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. A two-hour, highly produced documentary, Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti, which is really about Columbus. This is Columbus Day. And I've hoped to play excerpts of De Las Casas as well as of Christopher Columbus, one of the great historical criminals of this planet Earth. 212-209-2950. We're needing you now. 209-2950. Area code 212. Will somebody please join us at this time? 212-209-2950. We've got room for two more calls. 212-209-2950. Do it now so that already it's 3 minutes past the top of the hour. And will two people please join us now? I know you're listening. I see a lot of people online, you know, right? But we really need you to say that it's important. It's important that WBAI delve responsibly into the depths of history so that people of African heritage will not look like losers forever. That the glory of human triumph, which binds us all together, that's what BAI is, a thing that binds us all together. 212-209-2950. I know you got $100 for this radio station to support it for a year. Please, somebody, 209-2950. $60 gets you the two CD set. So much material. It required two audio CDs. And once you get it and listen to it, then you can pass it on. Each one teach one. 209-2950. One more call, and we'll go to the De Las Casas part. You know, that little sample that you heard, that's a special mix I made to play briefly this morning for you on Earthwatch. So I'm going to put you on your faith for a few minutes. Get the book, you know, because you can't just go and find this book. Believe me, I tried, you know, through all many bookstores in New York. That's a brief account of the destruction of the Indies by Bartolomé de las Casas, $60 pledge, $50 pledge by itself. The two CD set, $60. 212-209-2950, area code 212. Now, time is moving fast. We're coming up on 5 minutes past the hour. I think it's important that the information be shared. So I'm going to take the great leap of faith and give you a little bit of sample about the horrors that people of multicultural inspiration endured and then triumphed over. And maybe that'll inspire you. I certainly hope so. This is Earthwatch. Please give us a call, 212-209-2950.
This is the Sweet Science of Racism in Haiti.
Excerpt from De Las Casas, this book available
for 50. In his journal of October 12, 1492, Christopher Columbus described his first impression of the Tainos he met in the nearby Bahamas. "All I saw were young men, none more than 30 years of age. They are very well made, with very handsome bodies and very good countenances. Their hair is short and coarse, down to the eyebrows except for a few locks behind, which they wear long and never cut. Some paint themselves white, others red, and others of what color they find. They neither carry nor know anything of arms, for I showed them swords, and they took them by the blade and cut themselves through ignorance. They have no iron, their darts being wands without iron, some of them having a fish's tooth at the end, and others being pointed in various ways. They are all of fair stature and size, with good faces and well made. I saw some with marks of wounds on their bodies, and I made signs to ask what it was, and they gave me to understand that people from other adjacent islands came with the intention of seizing them, and that they defended themselves. I believed, and still believe, that they come here from the mainland to take them prisoners. They should be good servants and intelligent, for I observed that they quickly took in what was said to them, and I believe that they would easily be made Christians, as it appeared to me that they had no religion." In the following days, Columbus revealed a much deeper interest in the natives he would soon seize as slaves. He noticed that they were not only peaceful, but in possession of the gold that he had promised his Spanish sponsors. Columbus wrote, Some of them wore some pieces of gold hanging from the nose, and they gladly gave these for a hawk's bell and for glass beads. I saw that some of them had a small piece of gold fastened in the nose, and by signs I was able to make out that to the south there was a king who possessed a great quantity, end quote. In early 1493, as Columbus returned to Spain, he left behind a military garrison. Upon his return, he discovered the greed and cruelty of his 100 colonists had led to their deaths as native resentment and resistance grew. It was then that Admiral Columbus ordered the taking of slaves and ransoms of gold from the indigenous people. An eyewitness, the Spanish priest Bartolomé de las Casas, describes how they took the gold and subjugated the people. On this isle, as we have said, where the Spaniards' first attempt of the bloody slaughter and destruction first began, violently forcing away women and children to make them slaves, ill-treating them by consuming and wasting their food, which they had purchased with great sweat and toil, even that was not enough, and very inconsiderably only provided the food absolutely necessary to support nature without superfluity. When one individual Spaniard consumed more food in one day than would serve to maintain 3 native families in a month, every one consisting of 10 people, being oppressed by such evil and afflicted with such great torments and violence, they began to understand that the Spaniards are not on a mission from heaven, and therefore concealed their provisions, sending them to their wives and children, lurking in holes. But some, to avoid the obdurate and dreadful temper of Spaniards, sought their refuge in the rugged mountain tops. The Spaniards' cruelty did not end with cuffs, blows, and wicked cudgeling, but laid violent hands also on the city's governors, which at the height of the audacious acts a certain captain abused the consort of the isle's most powerful king. This is how rebellion started making its way in the minds of the natives, and they immediately took up arms. But, good God, what arms do you think they used? Reeds, where you fight with one another more than with manly arms and weapons. The Spaniards perceived this at once, but as opposed to the natives, mounted horses, were well weaponed with lances and swords, and began to exercise their bloody butcheries and strategies, overrunning their cities and towns, sparing no age or sex, ripping up their bellies, tore them alive in pieces. They laid wagers among themselves who should with a sword at one blow cut or divide a man in two, or which of them should decapitate or behead a man with the greatest dexterity. Even farther, which should sheath his sword in the bowels of a man with the quickest dispatch and expedition. They snatched young babes from the mother's breasts and then bashed the brains out of those innocents against the rocks. Others they cast into rivers, scoffing and jeering them, and called upon their bodies when falling with disrespect. This was the true testimony of their cruelty, inhumanly exposing others to their merciless swords, together with the mothers that gave them life. They erected certain gibbets, large but low made, so that their feet almost reached the ground, every one of which was so ordered as to bear 13 people in honor and reverence, as they said blasphemously, of our Redeemer and his 12 apostles, under which they made a fire, to burn them to ashes while they hang. But those they intended to preserve alive, they were dismissed, their hands half cut, and still hanging by the skin, to carry their letters to those that fly from us and lay skulking in the mountains. The lords and persons of noble extract were usually exposed to this kind of death. They ordered gridirons to be placed and supported with wooden forks. And putting a small fire under them, these miserable wretches by degrees and with loud shrieks and exquisite torments at last mercifully expired. I once saw 4 or 5 of their most powerful lords laid on these gridirons, roasted. And not far off, 2 or 3 more overspread with the same commodity.
man's flesh. But the shrill clamors which were heard there were deemed offensive by the captain, because they hindered his repose, and thus he commanded them to be strangled with a halter while they were being burned alive. The executioner, whose names and parents at Seville are not unknown to me, prohibited the doing of it, but stopped gags into their mouths to prevent the hearing of the noise, until they had died, when they had been roasted as long as he thought convenient. I was an eyewitness of these, and innumerable number of other cruelties. And because all men who could lay hold of the opportunity sought out lurking holes in the mountains to avoid the dangerous rocks so brutish and barbarous, they bred up such fierce hunting dogs as would devour an Indian like a hog at first sight in less than a moment. Such kinds of slaughters and cruelties as these were committed by the mutts, and if at any time it happened, which was rarely, that the Indians irritated upon a just account and destroyed or took away the life of any Spaniard, they promulgated and proclaimed this law among them, that 100 Indians should die for every individual Spaniard that should be slain.
Thank you, Burning Spear. This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. Samples and extracts from the extraordinary documentary, very successful for BAI, that we're offering you because it is Columbus Day. And there's more I want to sample for you, but we now have some new openings on the telephone lines. $100 gets you the two-hour double CD audio documentary, a part of the radio art that is the tradition of WBAI. And the book, A Brief History of by Bartolome de las Casas, a brief account of the destruction of the Indies. Okay, time is short. We have barely 15 minutes left. 212-209-2950 is the number. We really do need a dozen. I'll settle for a half dozen of you to call 212-209-2950 at this time. We only have one or two volunteers. So it's when I say that the lines are open, it's important that if you care about this program, about the ability of people to triumph over the most egregious transgressions, crimes against humanity, and apply that lesson to today. If you're smart enough to get that, please call us now, 212-209-2950. See, the real secret is this is not about history. This is how about no matter how far back or oppressed anybody came, we can all triumph under one blue sky as a rainbow race. 212-209-2950. But aside from the fact that corporate industry has mangled the dates of real anniversaries and holidays, I thought it would be a good idea on this October 12th edition of Earthwatch to look at the real history of Columbus. Who is with me on that? Nobody? Hello? 209-2950. We need people who are sufficiently comfortable to get the book, the rare book, and the BAI documentary. 212-209-2950, area code 212. There are no calls in progress right now. I've still got another segment I want you to hear. Track number four. Right now, while I'm here busy talking, I'd like you to call 209-2950. When I see two or three calls in progress, we will release. And we have only 13 minutes left. So somebody please make that call now, won't you? You know Earthwatch is a program dedicated to the ultimate apprehension of your beauty, intelligence, wit, and morality. And I'm asking you to kind of back up that premise right now with a measurable indication of support. $100, get that rare book, De las Casas, Brief Account of the Destruction of the Indies, as well as the documentary that should be copied and disseminated throughout every community possible. Area code 212-209-2950. Some people have been calling. Yves Verna. Yves Verna in Pinesney, New Jersey. And thank you. Thank you so much for that. Michael Shannon. Yes, good Irish name. Thank you, sir. Charubin Irlande. That might be a Haitian name, but it is certainly a person of humanitarian benevolence. Thank you. Neil A. Campbell from Porter Ranch, California. Yes. See, I know we get high ratings in the online here on Earthwatch. And somebody actually took me at my word when I said, if you're out of town, make it a long-distance call, because BAI has ambitions that are long-distance that go through the furthest reaches of distant space. Okay, all right, please, really now, we only have 11 minutes left. It's time for the next flurry. 212-209-2950. Please, somebody call now. Release the next acoustic segment. Really, I want so much to play this other part. You know what else is in there? I think one of the most revealing documents about racism in America today. And it comes not from the United States, but from Napoleon Bonaparte. This documentary includes a complete reading of the recently discovered full text of Napoleon's instructions to General Leclerc about how to use the tricks of color. Well, be nice to the lighter-skinned ones. Be brutal to the darker ones who are rebelling and take them to the knife. That's the phrase from that. 209-2950. Somebody please call now. I need three people to call. 212-209-2950 so that we can defend this space and say that those of the night are indeed people of resource and principle. Or maybe not. Depends on you. Thank you, Jean Castagnone. I don't know what heritage that name is from, but I know it's a person of principle who called up and pledged tonight at 212-209-2950. Neil Campbell, Yves Verna, Michael Shannon, Chirubin Irlande. 209-2950. There's one. 209-2950. Area code 212-209-2950. Okay, give me two more calls. Area code 212-209-2950. We'll get this rolling here. My dilemma is I'm trying to provide both information and raise funds. And, we're counting on you. We're counting on you to let the flow take care of itself, to let the audio, acoustic information be the incentive. 209-2950, area code 212. If somebody is hearing the phone ring, do not go away. Somebody will pick that up in just a moment. Please, stay there. This is Earthwatch. I'm taking a leap of faith.
We begin our exploration of Haiti's early history.
209-2950. I'll go back and answer phones.
Howard Zinn's seminal textbook.
209-2950.
The United States. In this
I'll
section,
go and help out. But you got a call.
5th,
here we go. We got a date.
Between
see you in a minute.
209-2950. $100.
The rare book.
De las Casas. Española,
the Destruction of the Indies.
But whose
and
original
the two-hour, two-CD.
Inspired by its Western
set.
Was
so, here, listen to this for a few minutes.
This is Earthwatch, 209-2950.
Men and women, naked, tawny, and full of wonder, emerged from their villages onto the island's beaches and swam out to get a closer look at the strange big boat. When Columbus and his sailors came ashore, carrying swords, speaking oddly, the Arawaks ran to greet them, brought them food, water, gifts. He later wrote of this in his log, "They brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears and many other things, which they exchanged for the glass beads and hawk's bells. They willingly traded everything they owned. They were well built, with good bodies and handsome features. They do not bear arms, and do not know them, for I showed them a sword, and they took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. They have no iron. Their spears are made of cane. They would make fine servants. With 50 men, we could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we want." End quote, Christopher Columbus. Zen continues, "These Arawaks of the Bahama Islands were much like Indians on the mainland, who were remarkable. European observers were to say again and again, they were remarkable for their hospitality, their belief in sharing. These traits did not stand out in the Europe of the Renaissance, dominated as it was by the religion of popes, the government of kings, the frenzy for money that marked Western civilization and its first messenger to the Americas, Christopher Columbus. Columbus wrote, quote, as soon as I arrived in the Indies, on the first island which I found, I took some of the natives by force in order that they might learn and might give me information of whatever there is in these parts, end quote. The information that Columbus wanted most was, where is the gold? The Indians, Columbus reported, quote, are so naive and so free with their possessions that no one who has not witnessed them would believe it. When you ask for something they have, they never say no. To the contrary, they offer to share with anyone, quote. Columbus concluded his report by asking for a little help from their majesties. And in return, he would bring them from his next voyage, quote, as much gold as they need and as many slaves as they ask, end quote. He was full of religious talk, quote, thus the eternal God, our Lord, gives victory to those who follow his way over apparent impossibilities, end quote. Because of Columbus's exaggerated report and promises, his second expedition was given 17 ships and more than 1,200 men. The aim was clear: slaves and gold. They went from island to island in the Caribbean, taking Indians as captives. But as word spread of the Europeans' intent, they found more and more empty villages. On Haiti, they found that the sailors left behind at Fort Navidad had been killed in a battle with the Indians after they had roamed the island in gangs looking for gold, taking women and children as slaves for sex and labor. Now, from his base on Haiti, Columbus sent expedition after expedition into the interior. They found no gold fields, but they had to fill up their ships returning to Spain with some kind of dividend. In the year 1495, they went on a great slave raid, rounded up 1,500 Arawak men, women, and children, put them in pens guarded by Spaniards and dogs, and then picked the 500 best specimens to load onto ships. Of those 500, 200 died en route. The rest arrived alive in Spain and were put up for sale by the archdeacon of the town, who reported that, although the slaves were naked as the day they were born, they showed no more embarrassment than animals, Columbus wrote. Let us, in the name of the Holy Trinity, go on sending all the slaves that can be sold, end quote.
And that's the sound of part of the documentary, The Sweet Science of Racism. And I just had a conversation with a Haitian mother, a woman of Seminole roots also, who told me that she has read the De Las Casas passages to her daughter or her children, and that they don't celebrate Columbus Day. This is the Columbus Day edition of Earthwatch. And it just made my heart beat a little faster. Now, these are the closing minutes of tonight's edition of Earthwatch, Columbus Day edition. And you have been generous so far. And we're just $400 short to the next $1,000 mark. Will four more people please call us at 212-209-2950? Because when we break that fourth digit, it matters. It gives some traction to the intellect and morality that is part of the tradition of this time of day, this time of week here at WBAI. And you have credits? Come say who's been helping us out. This is our tally coordinator.
You've got Betty back there. She's working hard. And also we have Jerome, who just took a slight necessary break, we'll call it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, good. All those phone calls makes you tired. You're the tally. How's that? What's that like?
Oh, well, you know, you're there and you just hope that people respond to excellent programming. And I really would like to see the calls double here because these are two fine presentations.
Thank
Where
you.
Are the people?
Okay, actually, there's one in progress. You Good. Better get your ass back there.
Oh, yes. I thought I could escape labor. Now you
tell them who you are.
Gerald.
All right. This is Earthwatch. And we need just three more people to call us to take us to a really remarkable presentation. Not only to management, but to our creditors. You are really supporting WBAI so that we can be who you need us to be at a time whose moment you may not know. 212-209-2950. Please, can we get just three more people as the consummation, the valedictory of tonight's program? We are celebrating Columbus Day through our humanity, through the belief that people of all cultures can come together in celebration of human dignity and triumph. 212-209-2950, area code 212. Someone else, we need three more people to join us right now. Area code 212. We will conclude as we began with the wonderful music of the Rivertown Kids. And, all right, who's going to make that call? We got one. We need three more people in progress. Please make that call now. 212-209-2950. Come on. Support the station that supports your mentality. Ah, look at that, look at that. Three more people. 212-209-2950. You're about to create a miracle. Three more of you. 209-2950, $100. You get De Las Casas, the interesting priest who is an eyewitness to the slaughter. $50, $60, The Sweet Science of Racism, one of BAI's rejuvenated reconstitution products. 209-2950. Get them both for $100. And send a message to Congress. 209-2950. Thank you, Rivertown Kids. Part of the youthful revolution because of better education today. 212-209-2950 is the way to understand how all of us, you see, even white people, along with black people, Indian people, colored people, can all share the triumph of the breaking of the bond of slavery. And I'd like to thank all of the brilliant and ethical people who've been calling up and supporting the program tonight. You've been generous. We need three more pledges for $100 to make an important symbolic mark. I hope you'll make that call to 209-2950, area code 212. And I thank you for your courage in listening tonight. My name is Robert Knight. You've been listening to Earthwatch, and Tony Ryan is the engineer. Gerald is the tally. Thanks to our volunteers, Sydney, Ken, and everybody else, especially you, who've emboldened us to respect your intelligence and change the world. We now go to a special presentation with Gary Null. This is WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and streaming at WBAI.org. I'm going to go in the back room and take your remnant calls at 212-209-2950. And I think something wonderful will have happened if you'll just make that call. So I'll be in the back room in just a minute. So if you want to pledge, I'll be among the volunteer who's answering the calls. So here now, the sounds of Gary Null.
Yo, this is Michael Franti from Spirit, and you're listening to non-commercial radio in New York. WBAI is a place to turn to.
Peace. Oh my God. Hear my mother got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my God. Hear my mother got a sleeping genocide singing. Oh my God. Hear my mother got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my. My God, oh my God.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today we have a special three-hour presentation. Some of you will only be able to hear 1 hour over your land-based terrestrial stations. However, if you have internet access, you can go to GaryNull.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, where it will be carried in full. Today we begin the challenge to all things a power. For as long as I have been in the field of health and nutrition and healing, environmental sciences, and being one of hundreds of millions of stewards of the earth, caring about human nature, we have been vilified, marginalized, excluded from any tables of discussion. We have not been considered to have validity on any level. The media has been participant in this, both the left and the right. We have seen our entire body politic controlled in such ways that in any reasonable person's mind would have them reject the entire political system as having any validity at all. How many times have we heard, well, anyone's better than a Republican, or the Republicans, anyone's better than a liberal? They are both wrong. And the only way I see that we can change anything is over a period of time. It will not come soon. It probably will take 4 to 6 years. But we are going on the offensive. all this time, whether it's one of the foolish quackbusters who have no scientific credibility whatsoever, and court records show they have been discredited as experts, they've been discredited in what they've done, and they've lost all their lawsuits. But still, they're quoted by the media. The chairmen of departments of different universities will sit with regularity on boards of major corporations, pharmaceutical industry, insurance industries, fuel industries, banking industries, give them their input, and still go on television as if they're objective and have only the truth as to what will guide them. We have politicians that now openly vie for $1 billion plus to get elected president. It is so shameful. This is worse than the Roman Empire in its final years of decline. We have people who are pseudo-intellects who act as if they're full intellects. We have people who marginalize groups and distort history. Everything is taken out of context. And unfortunately, the real progressives, the innovatives, the sensitives, the creative and dynamic energies that seek peace and solutions, those who've actually shown by action their deeds are sustainable, have not once been given a place at the table. They have been on the defensive. They simply walk each day through some gauntlet and are beaten verbally and excluded. It's now time to challenge these people. We will do so beginning today. I am doing a series of documentaries, the most important of which I have not discussed, nor will I, till it's ready on the day of its premiere. I intend to deconstruct every single institution in the United States. I intend to take on every single institution that exists, that has any power, because they are all perverse. They are all completely totalitarian, and they represent nothing that represents true democracy, freedom, enlightenment, or love, healing, or honest hope. Today we are going to begin, and you can assume that every single week I will be doing another step in this journey. The purpose is for those of you who are frustrated, for those of you who have tried different methods and it has not worked, for those of you who put your faith in the Democrats, Republicans, the conservatives, the liberal, the market system of economics, or the suburban sprawl, the answer lies there, you say. No, it does not. We will have insights that you may not have been aware of, and certainly a more honest portrayal of history. Today, my guest in this hour will be Dr. Larry Malerba. He is board certified as a physician, and he's also board certified as a homeopath, and he's clinical assistant professor in the Department of Preventive Medicine at New York Medical College. Our discussion will be on deconstructing assumptions about the scientific validity of conventional medicine. Let me be very clear. Let there be no doubt what I intend to do. I intend from today forward to show that what we call orthodox scientific medicine, the medicine of choice, is a fraud. That it kills more people every year than any other conflict, war, or any disease, or any accident every single year. It causes more injuries, over 10 million per year. It is never held accountable for its losses, its failures. It is bounded by hubris and arrogance, conceit that is unbridled. Donald Trump would look like Mother Teresa compared to the medical paradigm's leaders. We intend to challenge them, but with not ad hominem attacks or personal challenge, but rather a methodical deconstructing using scholarship and facts so that you can have some confidence the information being shared is valid. Later, in our next hour, we will be looking at deconstructing our entire economic model and how it has failed and how it has been a lie. Gerald Salante, without question and without peer in what he does, will be my guest for the hour. Others coming up will be Chris Hedges. We will have the best of our progressive minds to take issue. Helen Caldicott will be here to take issue with our safe nuclear plans. So everywhere we've been told, trust fluoride, we'll show you why not. Trust our diet, we'll show you why it's an adulteration leading to disease. Trust the medicines you're taking, why should we? Trust the vaccines, they're safe and effective. No, they are not. Held to any actual gold standard. Trust in our system, the system that has caused the rape and pillage of the American middle class, that has looked with disdain and neglect upon 70% of its population? No. It is time that we took the fight to them, and that's where it starts today. I just want to let you know what's coming and the enormous amount of scholarship that we have been engaged in quietly to prepare for this issue. I can promise you I will be taking on the New York Times, I will be taking on the Washington Post, I'll be taking on ABC, NBC, CBS, the anchors. We intend to leave nothing that is considered sacred, objective, alone. We intend to show you how blatantly corrupt all of these organizations are when it comes to looking for the truth and where they align themselves. Let us begin, however, with something positive that we can do every single day. We'll talk about health issues. First and foremost, you've heard of acai, A-C-A-I. It's a fruit that comes from South America. It's very healthy, and now more and more studies are showing how it benefits us. It's very good for your heart, according to the newest study. In the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition Journal, quote, acai shows heart-healthy benefits, and it lowers cholesterol, improves metabolic syndrome, which means it lowers your risks if you're overweight or diabetic or pre-diabetic from having a heart attack. Quote, this is from the study. This was an open-label pilot study designed to explore the potential effects of acai and on diabetes and cardiovascular disease. So it is not the definitive study, but it's certainly one more. And you have to look at all of the studies and all the different areas, and you start seeing a whole puzzle coming together, that this is one of those superfoods that deserves its reputation. Now, for all the pregnant women or someone that you know who is pregnant, many times they do not take vitamin supplements. They're told, oh, you don't need them. Yes, you do. The British Medical Journal has an article showing that nutritional supplements reduce preeclampsia risk, and especially in poorer countries like Mexico. And also keep in mind, for those who are not aware of it, that the protective effects of just a multiple, we're not even talking about a high potency, just a regular multiple nutritional supplement against preeclampsia, a serious condition characterized by high blood pressure and other abnormalities that can occur during pregnancy, B1, B2, B6, you know, vitamin C, vitamin E, L-arginine, niacin, folate, nothing unique, but let's just make sure that all pregnant women have their vitamins. And by the way, my brother Stephen has been making sure that every single month, every single pregnant woman in the Dominican Republic has a multiple vitamin for free. And then look at statistics of all of the birth problems they had prior to implementing this program and how few they have by comparison today. It's saved thousands of lives. So it does work. Now, some people believe, as I do, in fasting. I have an opportunity to fast probably a little more than the average person because I travel so much. I don't eat anything on an airplane. I won't compromise and eat in a regular restaurant. If the food is junk, I'm not going to put it in my body. I take powders with me, and as long as I have access to a juice or you know, clean water, I'm fine. But in effect, when you're not eating solid food, you're just juicing, you are fasting. And that's a good thing. Now, you have to know your system, and you have to know your metabolism, you have to know your needs, and you don't want to do it in a careless way. But done properly, periodic fasting, meaning one day per week, where you just have maybe a protein shake twice and juices, is good for you. Here is the latest on this. And lo and behold, it comes from Science Daily, the heart of mainstream medicine. This was from the Intermountain Medical Center Heart Institute, and it says the following. Routine periodic fasting is good for your health and your heart. Now, according to Science Daily, fasting has long been associated with religious rituals and diets and political protest. Now, they're saying new evidence. I would challenge that and say we have a lot of evidence in the scientific literature, from cardiac researchers demonstrating that routine periodic fasting is good for your health and your heart. So, now if you have heart disease, you're more likely to also suffer from diabetes or having inflammation in the arteries. You're also more likely to have elevated bad cholesterol. And both diabetes and elevated cholesterol are known risk factors for coronary heart disease. So in this group, they found that those who fasted on a regular basis had less heart disease, the leading cause of death among men and women in America. And it's published in the American College of Cardiology annual meeting. Quote, these new findings demonstrate that our original discovery was not a chance event, says Dr. Horn, director of the Cardiovascular and Genetic Epidemiology at the International Medical Center. You bet, and we didn't need a study to verify something that people all over the world have been doing for a long time, periodic fasting. Now, one of the things we have a problem with is the amount of salt in the American diet. It is way too elevated. So, here's the latest of why you should be very careful about the amount of salt in the diet. And if you want a good substitute for salt, let's say on a salad, how about taking some lemon and lime juice in equal amounts and put in some apple cider vinegar? That gives you a very nice taste, but also it satisfies that salty taste. It's because it's virtually identical to salt, but there's no sodium. And it's actually good for you because in both the lime and lemon is limonene, which is a nutrient that can help prevent damage to the DNA. It's anti-carcinogenic. So every time you have lemon juice, you're helping in a degree to a way of preventing cancer. That's why every time I get a juice, I stopped by a store yesterday in my travels, and there was a little restaurant, and they had a juice bar. Now, what was interesting, they were going to take the fruit right out of a bin and juice it. And I said, would you please wash that? Why? It's organic. I said, well, all the more reason to wash it. And I didn't want to give a whole class on hygiene, but I'd hate to think how many people ended up with food poisoning because of drinking an organic juice without having it washed. The rule is this. Wash everything that's going to go into your body unless it's been cooked, because anything can be contaminated. Now, where are the three most contaminating places in your home or in a business? First and foremost, the countertops. Secondly, the handles of refrigerators. Third, the sponges that they use to clean things and then don't disinfect or clean the sponges. So every time you clean something with a sponge, like a sink, you've now contaminated the sink. So let's say you just put something in the sink, like a salad, and you're washing it. Do you wash on both the up and bottom part of the salad, or just kind of like they do in a restaurant, just give a quick run over? What about all that debris that's in there that could end up causing all forms of parasitic reactions and food poisoning? And by the way, we're talking about 100 million plus food poisonings a year. And one of the most common ways of getting food poisoning is people who handle the salads. That's why I don't eat salads out. So anyhow, the person washed and washed it thoroughly. The apples and the ginger and then the lemon. And I said, make it equal parts lemon to apple. I'm on a 16-ounce juice. They said, well, that's an awful lot of lemon. I said, yes, it is. Well, can you drink that amount? I could drink 16 ounces of straight lemon. I've drank 32 ounces of straight lemon juice. No sweetener, just that it is. I can handle that because my body's adapted to that. Why would you want that much? So then I gave them a whole discussion of what's in the lemon and how it's one of the most important healing foods and detoxifying foods and energizing foods you can put. And if you've been exposed to any parasites or bacteria, if you have any strep or staph in your throat and you go to take some lemon juice, if you have ginger with it, a little bit of raw honey, you've just done a great healing inside the body. Anyhow, back to the point, the Journal of Neuroscience now shows that elevated levels of sodium in the body blunt the response to stress. So just remember, all those salty snacks or french fries or potato chips, they can be doing more than increasing your thirst. They could also be playing a role in suppressing hormone levels that your body actually needs. So just get rid of the sodium. And finally, there is still this question, are cell phones dangerous? The preponderance of information shows yes, they are. And there are now 33 studies that I have showing that they cause all forms of damage to the DNA, which then can lead to cancer. Here's just the latest, and this is from reported in Science Daily, and it's published in the research journal Andrologia. And here's what it says. Cell phone use may reduce male fertility, Australian-Canadian study shows. So for those couples trying to have a child, just understand that when you use a cell phone, it appears to increase the level of testosterone circulating in the body and also leads to low sperm quality and a decrease in fertility. So that was done at the Department of Pharmacology and Toxicology at Queen's University in Canada. So understand that it could be a big problem. Why? Because of the electromagnetic waves emanated by the cell phones can lead to a dual action on male hormone levels and fertility. And that's not good for you. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
This is Phil Donahue. And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey, Father, Father, we don't need to escalate.
Now for our issue of the day. After this issue, please call in, and I'll give you the number to call in a second, and share your points of view. And I'm going to give you a couple to think about today, so you won't just have one, you'll have two. The first one is from Harvey Wasserman on Fukushima's apocalyptic threat demands global action now. Why do I think this is important, and why am I sharing this one today? Because ask the average American, what's going on in Japan? I don't know. They had a earthquake and a tsunami and some problems with the meltdown, but that's all behind them. I guess they fixed it. No, they haven't. They have fixed nothing. So we're going to give you the latest on that. And then I want to do a shorter one on the idea that our medical journals in the United States are making unsubstantiated claims. Your physicians use this to justify giving you medications. The FDA has chosen not to challenge them at all, and yet no vitamin maker in the United States can make any claims without being shut down. This is the kind of double standard that we have. Should we allow this? There'll be two comments. Now, first to the first one. I'll quote Harvey Wasserman. Fukushima may be an apocalyptic downward spiral. Forget the corporate-induced media coma that says otherwise, or nothing at all. Lethal radiation is spewing unabated. Emission levels could seriously escalate. There is no end in sight. The potential is many times worse than Chernobyl. Containing this disaster may be beyond the abilities of Tokyo Electric or the Japanese government. There is no reason to incur further unnecessary risk. We all needed resources. It's time for the world's best scientists and engineers to take charge. Even then, the outcome is unclear. For a brief but terrifying overview, consult Dr. Chris Busby. By the way, you can hear Dr. Busby on the archives because we interviewed him. Fukushima units 1, 2, and 3 are all in various stages of melting down today. Molten fuel at Unit 1 may have burned through its reactor pressure vessel with water poured in to cool it merely pouring out the bottom. A growing pond of highly reactive liquid is softening the ground and draining into the ocean. There is no way to predict where these molten masses of fuel will go. Especially in the event of an aftershock, steam and hydrogen explosions could blow out what's left of the containments. The extra plutonium in the MOX fuel at Unit 3 is an added liability. At least one spent fuel pool has been on fire. The site has already suffered at least two hydrogen explosions. Some believe a fission explosion may have also occurred. All have weakened the structures and support systems on site. These shocks and the soft ground may be why Unit 4 has partially sunk and is tipping, possibly on the brink of collapse. Even a relatively minor aftershock could mean catastrophe. More explosions are possible. More leaks are virtually certain. Escalated radiation levels from any one of the reactors could force all workers to evacuate, leaving the entire site to chance. The New York Times has now reported the critical valve failures that contributed to the Fukushima disaster are likely at numerous U.S. reactors. Significant radioactive debris has been found thousands of yards from the plant. Radiation levels in Tokyo, 200 miles away, have risen. Fallout has been detected in North America and throughout Europe. Radiation pouring into the sea has begun to spread worldwide. There is much more, none of it good. Japan and Germany have had the good survival sense to abandon future reaction construction and to shut some existing sites down. But here the corporate media blackout is virtually complete. Out of sight, out of mind seems the strategy for an industry desperate for federal loan guarantees and continued operation of a rickety fleet of decaying old reactors. The Obama administration has ended radiation monitoring of seafood in the Pacific. It does not provide reliable, systematic radiological or medical data on fallout coming to the United States. But we are all in unprecedented danger. A national movement is underway to end atomic giveaways and turn to a green, powered Earth. Now we must all move the world's governments beyond denial to focus on somehow bringing Fukushima under control. After 2 months of all-out effort, four reactors and at least that many spent fuel pools remain at risk. Our survival depends upon stopping Fukushima from further irradiating us all. The world community has come together to put a new sarcophagus around Chernobyl. A parallel, more urgent effort now needs to focus on Fukushima. Whatever technical, scientific, and material resources are available to our species, that's what needs to go there and now. And that's from Harvey Wasserman. And by the way, I believe at the same time there should be an effort to stop genetic engineering altogether of all foods. This is just the latest. Quote, new research from Canada has found the BT toxin produced by genetically modified insect-resistant crops in the blood of women and clear evidence that it is passed into fetuses. Pesticides used on genetically modified herbicide-tolerant crops were also detected. And we're calling for an immediate halt to genetically modified BT crop cultivation and imports of BT genetically modified food and feed until the findings are properly evaluated and further study confirms product safety. Because right now, all that is going on in the United States. You're eating corn on the cob at this time of year. You're eating dairy. You're eating beef. The grains that were grown are almost 90% genetically modified. So you need to know that you should eat organic only. Otherwise, you could end up polluting yourself. And finally, this is important and is not discussed at all. This is from Washington. Quote, a set of confidential federal audits accused the nation's five largest mortgage companies of defrauding taxpayers in their handling of foreclosures on homes purchased with government-backed loans. Four officials briefed on the findings, told the Huffington Post. The five separate investigations were conducted by the Department of Housing and Urban Development's Inspector General and examined Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, and Ally Financial. The audits accused the five major lenders of violating the False Claims Act. That's a law crafted as a weapon against firms that swindle the government. The audits were completed in February. So here's my thoughts. Here are five of the most powerful corporations with gazillion lobbyists, former legislators on their payroll, former top people in governmental agencies of oversight. So none of them are being prosecuted. So they can get away with breaking the law, throwing millions of people out on the streets, profiting by getting zero interest loans from the Federal Reserve, giving the Federal Reserve toxic assets, junk garbage assets as collateral, and then getting money at zero interest and then charging you 800 to 3 or 4,000 percent. Remember, every credit card that you go delinquent on, every debit card you go delinquent on, they could charge you 1,000% interest. They're not halted at all. Why is it that we should have one set of laws and rules and ethics for those who are in power or have access to power and all the rest of us? If you went to a bank and said, I could buy this house. Okay, it's $100,000. What's your collateral? I have some old running shoes. Yeah. And you want to put your old running shoes up as collateral on a $100,000 house? Yeah, why not? Because your old running shoes are worth nothing. Okay, fine. Legitimate. Bank, I want $100 billion. What's your collateral? I'll give you some of the old mortgages that are worth nothing. Okay, we'll take it. And here's your money at zero interest. That's what's happening. And both the Democrats and Republicans have encouraged it and allowed it and protected it. We, the public, should have a voice in it. Your thoughts. Those are our issues of the day. I'm going to go to my guest right after we speak with you and you have a chance to share your points of view. Call now 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, on the genetically modified food, just keep this in mind. Virtually all the political appointments by the last in this administration, and even going back to the Clinton administration, have been to have individuals oversee the safety of our food coming directly from the genetic modifying companies themselves. And then they would go back into that company and then come back into federal government, like Michael Taylor. At no time, even though on repeated occasions we have submitted lists of qualified individuals to oversee food safety, were any of those considered. Every single appointment, without exception, is always a political insider with economic interest at stake. At what point do we say, enough of this? Our food has not been tested for safety. There are no long-term human studies on any genetically modified food whatsoever. I know that for a fact. I'm doing a major documentary as we speak. I've been filming around the world, just finished filming in India, on genetically modified food. And by the way, over 200,000 farmers there have committed suicide because they went broke using genetically modified cotton and they drank the pesticide that they were putting on their crops as a final protest against Monsanto and the other companies. And yet our administration doesn't care about these farmers, doesn't care about the American farmer, but boy do they care about those who give them political campaign donations. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Turn to speak out. Let's say hello to John from Manhattan. Hi, John.
Gary, I'd like to thank you, first of all, for taking this call, and thank you for also opening, I will say, our eyes when it comes to dealing with this fraud that banks are these days, or always have been. And I'd like to ask you, do you have any recommendations about web banks to deal with when it comes to doing business? Because I know you have information that most of us don't have.
Yes, I'd be happy to share it. But keep in mind, I don't believe that just giving opinions matter as such. It was Walter Raleigh who said, it is not truth but opinion that can travel the world without a passport. Or better still, Lawrence Peter, who said, when I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. So let us go from opinion, which is completely subjective, to substantiated fact. Contact your bank and ask them for their annual report and see their position on derivatives, credit default swaps, the load of debt that they're handling, and the type of services that they offer and what they charge for those services. Also see what percentage of their portfolio they have been engaged in defaults on mortgages and repossessions. Right now, there is an enormous hidden story that the American public is not aware of. I was sitting on a plane recently, which is just about every day, and a person sitting beside me who didn't know me was looking at what I was writing and said, and just saw the title of the article and said, that's interesting. And I said, what do you do? And this person says, well, I'm in the real estate business. And I asked them their opinion, and they thought it was a great time to buy and great deals. And I said, okay, let's say that you could go out right now and you can buy a house. And the original price of the house was $300,000, and now it's $250,000. So you've saved $50,000. Would that be a good deal? He said, yeah, that'd be a good deal. But he said, I can even get better deals. I could get them, let's say, originally $300,000. I could get it for $200,000. I said, fair enough. I said, that's assuming that the market is completely collapsed. Do you have any idea how many of those foreclosed homes have been kept off the market? Banks are simply holding them? Because if you put all the homes on the market right now that have been foreclosed on, that are empty, the banks own, you would drop the price of the existing real estate down by almost 50%. So then, buying a home at $200,000 that was once $300,000 is now worth $100,000, you just lost $100,000. And you'll never make that back because there's not going to be another real estate bubble. You have been wiped out. I said, so until such time that we know exactly what a bank's holding, all banks are holding, and also many banks are going to auctions and buying back their own homes at pennies on the dollar so they can turn around and put it back into inventory, in effect, double dipping. They made the money first time around, now they're going to make it a second time around. So this is the corruption within the banking system, part of the corruption. Also, all those fees that the banks make on every transaction, $7 billion thus far this year was made on ATM fees. You don't realize how much you're charged every time you put money in or take money out. Every time a bank pays a bill for you, you think it's a good thing, you're charged for that. And yet they've tried to make it seem as if we'll pay your gas bill, your electric bill, your mortgage, we'll pay your rent, we'll pay it all for you. Yes, they will. And do a pretty good job for a fee. A lot more than what it would cost you to put a stamp on an envelope and fill out the check and send it yourself. So therefore, look to see if these are the major banks that are making money in the casino industry. Meaning, let me put this as simple as I can. You have two types of banks and credit institutions. One that is a savings and loan. They can't give much of an interest because the interest is a zero. Therefore, you're not going to make anything on your savings account. So people think, oh, I better put my money where I can make a greater return. I say don't do that. At this time, it's not important what you make on your return. It's what you save on your principal. I would rather make zero interest and protect my principal than to risk in any kind of bond that could end up going broke out there. And right now, there are no such things as an absolutely 100% safe investment. Even governments are collapsing and defaulting, as we saw in Iceland, as we're likely to see in Portugal and Greece and Ireland in the near future, because there's a certain point where the banks get all the money through a structured loan repayment from the International Monetary Fund that came and gave them a certain amount of money, but a lot of the money they gave went to the banks. So the very people caused the crisis then call for the International Monetary Fund to come in and give them bailouts, so they get the bailout, but then they're stuck giving away their pensions, giving up their retirement, giving up their health plans. The public has to make all the sacrifices on its side. The banks make none on their side. The system is utterly corrupt. And only when the youth and the progressives go to the street and challenge the government, as they've done in the Middle East for food and jobs, and the Western countries for their assets that have depreciated and their pensions and social safety net that's being deconstructed. All the while, the banks got richer. and the culprit behind it, and the person really behind it, is the head of the Federal Reserve. Now, then there are the banks that will make money based upon making sure that a corporation is always profitable. Turn on any of the talking head shows, MSNBC or CNBC or Fox Business Channel, and what they're talking about is, buy this one today because they're showing better earnings, and don't buy that because they don't have strong earnings. And this one looks like it's going to be acquired by this one, so buy that one. But that one, you know, they're having some problems over there in growth, so don't buy them. What it means is today, in order to be in a trade on Wall Street and keep the value of your stock up and hence your stockholders happy in buying, and especially your institutional buyers, you have to be extremely ruthless. You cannot care about the workers. Downsize them. You can't care about the quality of your product. Make it as cheaply as possible anywhere in the world you can. Hence the excess jobs and companies going to China, Bangladesh, India, where quality control is substantially less than in the United States. And then bring it back. And look at all the bad products that have been brought back in from these countries that were recalled, but think of 100 times more that were not recalled that we didn't know about. So now it's no longer good enough to be a well-run company creating a good product that has made it the highest quality here in America. That is virtually irrelevant. All Wall Street cares about is profits. Profits. So anything that will increase profits, deregulate. Let's not put in those stupid smokestack catalytic converters. Let's just let that pollution go right into the ocean, right into the river, right into the air. That saves us money, which means our bottom line is better. So that is what is happening. So the old idea to make a good quality product, stand behind it, and don't consider that growth and large growth or rapid growth is what is important, but simply slow down and just be sustainable. That is a completely antiquated concept in the minds of those controlling the market. You've got to be able to look at your bank and see, are they supporting renewable energies? Are they supporting small business people in doing quality businesses? Or is it all about casino capitalism? Pull your money out of all banks, engage in casino capitalism, put them in savings loan, small savings loan, study their balance sheets, and therefore you'll be protected. Okay? All the best to you. We're going to go to our guests in one moment. I just want to take one more call. We had a full line there. Let's just say hello to, who do we have here? John from Long Island.
Hi, Gary. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to say really quickly, right now we're talking about Japan, and it's a crucial issue. Hopefully this negative will turn into a positive and people will see the light, and we will ban all nuclear energy because of this event. But the controlled media, of course, is interfering. The other thing I wanted to say is right now in the Mississippi, a few days ago, there was a leak. Whether or not it was intentional or not, I don't know. But notice how the media is not reporting it, and all the secondary and non-primary media are trying to attempt to get this message out. And my point is that, you know, we've got issues right here in our backyard. Now, notice how everyone's talking about the Mississippi's overflooding, but they're not talking about the fact that nuclear waste has been accidentally spilled into the Mississippi. Now, on a broader perspective, if you really look at what's going on, the people who control our world, the shadow government, they're not that stupid. There's an agenda. It's enslavement. How do you keep people enslaved? Well, you dumb them down. You don't give them education. You attempt, there's also an agenda, it started in 1954, to diminish the world's population. So, my point is this has all been orchestrated. This has all been planned. And we need to take our government over. And these people need to be tried and hung on the steps of the Capitol, which is
okay.
Something.
So that's let's rephrase this without the anger, all right? I don't hold people accountable for what they say when they're angry, and I understand your anger, but we're not going to hang anyone. We are not a Robespierrean court. We believe in due process. We believe in giving people an opportunity in any circumstance to defend themselves as you would want for yourself. We are not a mob. We're not out looking to take anyone that we perceive as being responsible for our problems and engage in a hate campaign. We're coming from a peaceful, loving place, but we're still determined. Now, I wouldn't say that anyone's trying to enslave us. Instead, I would say that they are determined to profit at this off of us at the same time controlling how we respond to them and how we respond to the conditions that we are living in. If you can get people to adapt to the conditions, adapt to the media, adapt to their so-called truths, then they are a slave at one level in that they're not going to even understand how much power they have. They've given their process of thinking, process of actualizing, process of change to a relatively small group of people who will make those decisions for them. We're trying to get people to take back these decisions and put people who are more enlightened, more humanistic, more spiritual, and more caring and inclusive to give them those choices. The other people have had that opportunity, and they have blown it. So I understand your anger, but please temper the anger and so you don't marginalize the contempt you have for the corruption that is so palpable. Thank you. One last call. Remember, we have a three-hour special day, so our guests will go into our next hour. Let's say hello to Sean from New York. Hi, Sean. You're on the air. Sean, you're on the air. Please speak up.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Sean, yes.
I want to thank you. I thought you said Sean. I didn't know I was on. I want to thank you for the incredible job. I only just recently started listening to WBAI. In your show, and it's so heartwarming to hear someone who knows what's going on in all facets of our life, from the health to the political to the economic, and I can't tell you how refreshing it is, and heartwarming that I want you to keep up the great work. And I do go to your store occasionally when I'm in the area. What I want to tell you is one of the things is that on the CBC website now, it has a section for zombie apocalypse. This is what our government, this pseudo-legitimate part of the government says, is talking about, warning us about zombie apocalypse, if you can imagine that. Now, I know you know how corrupt the CDC is, but to go to such lengths is horrific.
Well, I think you've misunderstood the metaphor. Let me put it in a little different perspective. We had what was called zombie economics and zombie banks. A zombie bank is a bank that is bankrupt but continues to function and should have gone through a structured takeover by the FDIC, its officers and directors let go, and restructured and protect the investment of the savings loan holders in the bank. We have that now in several industries. For example, if you or I, if we cannot pay our bills, and if we cannot garner a public flow in to support us, we go bankrupt. We lose our savings. the zombie economy are those major corporations, including Wall Street firms, that are virtually insolvent based upon the positions they've taken on derivatives, credit default swaps, and the actual cash reserves they have. And yet they're allowed to continue functioning and giving profits to their investors and bonuses to themselves because what is off-sheet is not considered at all. So that's one of the reasons that they use that term. Thank you very much, Sean. We're going to go to our guest in just a second here, but please remember we have a three-hour special today. My guests will have lots of time to talk. I just want to address Mark Levin. I have no problem with Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly, and all the other people who have a particular point of view. They have a right to that point of view. In fact, sometimes they actually will say something that I could agree with. Not often, but they do. So it's not that that I have an issue with. I have an issue, however, when they're inaccurate or they give only half of the truth. There's an old Jewish saying, a half truth is a full lie. Last evening when I was traveling back from an airport in a cab, the driver had on Fox News. And I was listening to Mark Levin, and he went on this rant about how, you know, President Obama has, you know, selling out the most important friends we have, the only democracy in the Middle East, Israel, and there should only be one state, the Jewish state, and that the Muslims, the Palestinians, have no right to be there, they have no historical precedent there. And then he gave a very superficial but actually accurate overview of the Jews' right to Jerusalem. And his statements in that context I would not disagree with. It's what he left out of it. He clearly left out that the Muslims had no right to Jerusalem or even to be living there at all. Just to set the record straight, from multiple scholars around the world, let's go back, Mark, into just a little authentic history. The siege of Jerusalem in 614. After 21 days of relentless siege warfare, Jerusalem was captured. The Sassanid army, the Muslim army, and the Jews together slaughtered tens of thousands of Christians in the city, an episode which has been hotly debated by historians. The conquered city would remain Muslim for 15 years until the Byzantine emperor, Heraclius, conquered it in 629. Then Jerusalem is considered Islam's third holiest city. Now, you should have put that in context. Yes, Mecca is number one, and Medina is number two, but Jerusalem is number three. And among Muslims of the earliest era, it was referred to as the Madinat Bayt al-Maqut, which is the city of the temple, which was restricted to the Temple Mount. The Islamization of Jerusalem began in the first year AH, 620 CE, when Muslims were instructed to face the city while performing their daily prostrations, and according to Muslim religious traditions, Muhammad's night journey and ascension to heaven took place. And after 16 months, the direction of the prayer was changed to Mecca. In 638, the Islamic Caliphate extended its dominion to Jerusalem. With the Arab conquest, Jews were allowed back into the city. And the Rashidun Caliph, Omar Khattab, signed a treaty with the Monophysite Christian Patriarch, Sopharinus, assuring him that Jerusalem's Christian holy place and population would be protected under Muslim rule. And in 1099, the Fatimid, the Muslim ruler, expelled the native Christian population before Jerusalem was conquered by the Crusaders, who massacred most of the Jewish and Muslim inhabitants when they took the solidly defended city by assault. And after a period of siege, later the Crusaders created the Kingdom of Jerusalem. And by early June 1099, Jerusalem's population had declined from 70,000 to less than 30,000. In 1187, the city was wrested from the Crusaders by Saladin, who permitted Jews and Muslims to return and settle in the city. And under the Ayyubid dynasty of Saladin, a period of huge investment began in the construction of houses and markets and hostels as well as religious endowments. However, for most of the 13th century, Jerusalem declined to the status of a village due to the city's fall of strategic value and the struggles. And in 1244, Jerusalem was sacked by the Tartars, like a Mongol hordes that came after the out of the steppes of the Caucasus in Russia, who decimated the city's Christian population, drove out the Jews. And the Tartars were driven out in 1247. And from 1250 to 1517, Jerusalem was ruled by the Mamluks, which was an Egyptian Muslim dynasty. And during this period of time, many clashes occurred between the Mamluks on one side and the Crusaders and the Mongols on the other side. And the area also suffered many earthquakes and the Black Plague. And in 1517, Jerusalem and the environs fell to the Ottoman Turks, who remained in control until 1917. And Jerusalem enjoyed a prosperous period of renewal and peace under the rule. And it also engaged in the rebuilding of the magnificent walls around the old city. And the Ottomans brought many innovations. They brought the postal system. They brought in all the consulates, the use of the wheel for modes of transportation, the stagecoach carriage, and all these other things. And also, the Ottoman rule was in 1831, there was the annexation of Jerusalem by the Muhammad Ali of Egypt. The foreign missions and consulates began to establish a foothold in the city. And then in 1917, after the Battle of Jerusalem, the British army led by General Allenby conquered the city. And in 1922, the League of Nations at the Conference of Lausanne entrusted the United Kingdom to administer the Mandate for Palestine and the neighboring Mandate for Transjordan to the east of the across the River Jordan and the Iraq Mandate beyond it. From 1922 to 1948, the total population of the city rose from 52,000 to 165,000, with two-thirds of Jews and one-third of Arabs. And the situation between Arabs and Jews in Palestine was not quiet. In Jerusalem in particular, riots occurred in 1920, 1929, and other British new garden suburbs were built in the western and northern parts of the city, and institutions of higher education became, for example, Hebrew University was founded. So to leave all of this out, Mark, is to do a disservice to a true understanding of the relationships between Muslims and Jews in Jerusalem. And it is my belief that only when there is a two-state where both Jews and Muslims can live in peace and harmony, side by side, with no form of limitation on their rights to advance and to live a quality of life, will there be peace. Those are my own particular points of view. I'm Gary Null, back in a moment with our guest. Please stay with us.
Okay, so your heart broke. You sit around moping, crying, crying. You say you even thinking about dying? Well, before you do anything rash, dig this. Everybody plays a fool sometimes. There's no exception to the rule. Listen, baby, it may be factual, may be cruel. I'm lying. Everybody plays a fool. Falling in love is such an easy thing to do, and there's no guarantee that the one you love is gonna love you. Oh, loving as they cannot see, a certain person could never be. Love runs deeper than any ocean, it clouds your mind. To the room. Listen, baby,
Everyone, I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to WBAI. And we have a lot of program today. We have two more hours. My guest coming up in a few minutes will be Dr. Larry Marirba. He is a board-certified physician, and we're going to begin a process of offering our input as to why the existing paradigms in our society should be deconstructed. Because they work for those in power, they do not work for the rest of us. But we have to have a great deal of scholarship, objective science, and information in order to do a proper job. They only have to have belief on their side because they control virtually all the apparatuses of power. So we're going to talk about deconstructing assumptions about the scientific validity of conventional medicine. My guest is a board-certified physician, also board-certified in homeopathic medicine. He is from Guiderland in upstate New York, and he is the author of an important book called Green Medicine, Challenging the Assumption of Conventional Medical Care, which takes a real hard look at various failures of the present medical model for addressing the roots for preventing and treating disease. He'll be with us in just a second. Then, at the top of the next hour, challenging our economic and institutional assumptions of who should be in power, what they have done with this power, how the power has benefited small groups but not the general public, and certainly not the world community. We'll be looking at the use of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and the World Trade Organization and various Democrat and Republican administrations and how it's impacted people around the world. Gerald Salonte, singularly in a class by himself, will be my guest at the top of the next hour. Let me just say hello to my guest right now, since he was standing by in the last program, but I didn't get to him because I wanted to address a comment to Mark Levin on Fox that he was giving his position on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And virtually everyone on Fox is so radically pro-Israel with no objective sense of the nature of the conflict. And I wanted simply to provide a more objective sense of history that he left out last night in his commentary. So now we have Dr. Larry Marirba on the phone. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary. It's nice to be with you.
Good. I'm going to ask you to stand by for a few moments, if you would, please.
Sure.
We're going to be raising some funds for the station, and then you and I are going to deconstruct the assumptions about the scientific validity of conventional medicine. Our problem is, Larry, we have done this by bits and pieces. I remember I wrote, along with Robert Houston, the first article to challenge the scientific validity of our war on cancer in 1976. Called The Politics of Cancer. And then I followed that with 28 additional articles, cover story articles, in national publication. Following that, we made a dent. 60 Minutes did a special, 2020 did a special, Gabe Pressman did a 10-part special. In effect, what we did, we were so concentrated in going after that one notion that, our war on cancer is the right war to fight, and we show it was the wrong war to fight. We were doing it wrong, that we did make some inroads, and we got some freedom of a practice of physicians using alternative therapies for cancer. Then we did it with heart disease, and we did it with AIDS. We have not been as successful with AIDS because they are so well equipped to fight back. But I believe that we can't do it in drips and drabs. I believe we must concentrate our efforts in one area at a time, educate the public with as many articles, essays, videos, and then when it's concentrated, the public finally gets it. Let them then share that information and deconstruct the power system to pull away from the existing system and engage in a healthier, more natural system. We're doing it now with vaccines. We have made an enormous, enormous inroads with 23 articles we've written in two documentaries, Vaccination and Autism Made in the USA, all this in the last 2 years. So now tens of millions of people are aware that vaccines are not safe or effective for any given individual, and therefore don't just assume that whatever your doctor, nurse, or pediatrician tells you, or someone from the CDC or National Institute of Health tells you is correct. Challenge it. Question it. Do your homework, because your life or your child's life could be at risk if you don't. So that's the approach we're going to deal in. And if you feel comfortable dealing in that area, in your area of expertise, and deconstructing the assumptions of the scientific validity of conventional medicine from your point of view, we're going to take this on in a few minutes.
Very good.
You feel comfortable with that?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
That sounds like a great idea.
Good. Well, I thank you for your patience. Please stand by. And we'll come back with you, and as soon as we raise a little bit of money for this very important forum, WBAI. Now into our studios, and BAI and Michael G. Haskin. Today, we're going to offer just two premiums. In this hour, we're going to offer we're going to offer How to Live Forever, the book, 600-plus pages. It took years and years to write, and a documentary that goes with it. You can have either or both. First, let me explain the book and why it's so important. My entire adult life has been spent as a consumer activist, as a dietitian, registered dietitian, as a nutritionist, as a board-certified PhD in public health science and human nutrition, and as a research scientist in anti-aging medicine at the Institute of Applied Biology for 30 years, and a research fellow, publishing papers, doing 47 clinical studies. The last of those studies just finished 2 days ago, Wednesday night. I'll be doing a new one, starting a new one, that generally goes anywhere from 6 months to a year. All of these studies had something in common. Over 30,000 people, over 47 clinical studies. For what reason? To slow down the aging process at the cellular level, to repair people's DNA, and the normal person has between 60 and 100 trillion cells, and those cells are damaged about 10,000 gene alterations per cell per day. The reason why we get old so fast is the more things that damage the cell, the greater the cumulative damage, the faster the cell ages. When we're younger, we don't notice because we have a lot of backup reserve cells, and we have greater capacity to repair the damage. The older we get, older meaning after the age of 35, the less genetic restorative material we have. Our telomeres, which are the caps at the end of chromosomes, when they're long, that's a good thing. When they're short, that's a bad thing. The shorter the telomeres, the less life that chromosome's going to have, and you finally live out the life. The biological clock stops. When the biological clock of an organ stops, the heart, the brain, you stop. Please understand, Michael, we do not have one biological clock that says, oh, you're going to live to be 78 or 123. Mm-hmm. Every single organ in our body has its own biological clock. So therefore, you might still have years to go on your lungs, but if your heart biological clock goes out, or your brain, then you're affected by your weakest link, the clock that ticks out first. Now, if you ate French fries, that would cause inflammation. That would also clog some of the arteries. That would lay down some plaque. That would raise your damage of the tubules that have to filter out the sodium through your kidneys. So your kidneys are going to be prematurely aging, but from just French fries. May not make a big difference, but it'll make some difference. Now throw in colas. Ah, now you're adversely affecting the pH of the body, like coffee does, and you're going to cause a diuretic action to lose some of the calcium and zinc and potassium, because when you drink coffee or cola and you have vitamins in your system, in your stomach or intestine, it washes a lot of them out. It's a diuretic. Bad thing. I even know people who take their vitamins with coffee. Terrible thing. But that's what they do. That means now the coffee and the French fries together are going to be two things aging you. Now take into account the air pollution that you're breathing each day. The particulate matter you see and the particulate matter you don't see. Your exposure to background radiation, the amount of electromagnetic pulses from cell towers you live nearby, or overhead power lines you're living nearby. And then the cell phones you use, the computer you use, even the electronic equipment that you and I are both using. That is throwing off an electromagnetic pulse. If you stay 4 feet away from it, you have 90% reduction. The closer you are, the more you're getting that pulse, and it will affect you. Now imagine that you're not getting a good night's sleep, so your pineal gland's not secreting enough melatonin. Now imagine that the hamburgers you were eating are laying down a plaque in the brain as well as in the arteries. The arterial plaque is one form of plaque, but the type of plaque in the brain, the amyloid plaque, will lead to Parkinson's, dementia, and Alzheimer's. Now the type of free radicals from smoking some cigarettes or taking some medication or taking some drugs and eating those acrylamide donuts and bagels and toast, now, gee whiz, you're taking in, the average American takes in over 120 toxins per day, all of which cause the cell's DNA to be hurt. The cell ultimately is hurt by what we call free radicals or inflammatory agents. They go by different names, tumor necrosis factor alpha, and there are over 67 different known major inflammatory agents that can hurt the cell, causing swelling and pain. And then what do? Ooh, you were drinking the dairy, you were eating the cheese, you were having the pizzas, now your joints are swollen, so you take Vioxx, and it kills you, or you have a heart attack. Or you take Celebrex, and that can also kill you. Or you take aspirin, and 24,000 Americans died this past year from internal bleeding from aspirin and other non-steroidal anti-inflammatories over the counter. But if they're going to kill 24,000 people, wouldn't you think that 24,000 people dying, someone would do something? No, nothing is done, because that would interfere with someone making a profit. But in my world, I first have to understand what's causing the cell to age prematurely. Because if I can slow down that aging, if I can repair the damage, then I can help prevent macular degeneration and cataracts and glaucoma. I can prevent liver failure and kidney failure. I can prevent lung diseases and heart diseases. I can prevent the damage in your arteries and the damage in your brain. I can tighten up the skin. I can reverse hair that is turning prematurely gray and thinning and balding because of what we're taking in that's adversely affecting it. I can help rebalance a woman's hormones who's going through menopause. These are the things that we can do. Now, here's the difference, Michael. This is not theory. Theory is when you have a hypothesis. I wonder what would happen if I stopped eating A and B and C and instead I ate these other foods. What if I didn't take in an aspirin, but I took in vitamin E with tocotrienols and mixed tocopherols at 800 units a day in two divided doses? Well, gee whiz, it'll thin the blood. What's the purpose of taking aspirin? It thins the blood and prevents a heart attack. No, it prevents a stroke more than a heart attack, but it also causes the destruction of vitamin C, folic acid, B6, and B12. So an aspirin may prevent you from having a stroke, good, but it raises your homocysteine levels because it destroys those nutrients that are responsible for giving you a lower homocysteine, which then can cause an increase in heart attacks and cancer. Bad. So it's a bad trade-off. Why not take in vitamin E and tocotrienols? Because then you thin the blood, preventing stroke and heart attack, good. And you also re-energize the blood by increasing oxygenation of the blood, and you trap free radicals that damage the cell. Good, good, good. So you've got nothing but good on one side and good, bad on the other. Medicine says, but we only want you taking the aspirin. And I'm saying, hold on a second. If you had no other choice but to take aspirin and you had nothing else to take, yes, if you wanted to prevent a heart attack, if you had one, I could accept that. But if you have options, and we do, why take something you could bleed to death from that's going to kill 24,000 people this year? Now, isn't it amazing, Michael, that 24,000 people die in a plane series of plane wrecks?
Right.
You can bet. Or elevators that people get on and just fall straight to the ground out of a skyscraper and 24,000 people die in 1 year of elevators. Nobody would get on an elevator. Mm-hmm. Nobody would get on an airplane. You wouldn't have one flyer unless they got drunk, get on an airplane. Yet we're killing 24,000 people and considering that a non-story. It's not even discussed. We're killing 700,000 people using accepted medical practices each year. That's not me saying that. That's a doctor from Harvard saying that, as well as their own statistics. They're just not paying attention to it. Let me put it in perspective. More Americans will die this year from medical practices and iatrogenesis than all of American casualties in the First and Second and Vietnam Wars combined. Wouldn't you think someone would say, let us examine this objectively and see what we can do to prevent this? Not a single, no meetings, nothing. This is the 20,000-pound gorilla in the room that no one's paying attention to. So, when I put together clinical studies, I'm doing so to see if my theories have any value or not. And then each study, I gain something new in the way of new insights. It was not until my 12th study, and I tried something different. I put one group of individuals on a study, giving them a perfect diet, a 75% raw, all organic, 25 to 30% lightly cooked. And when I say lightly cooked, Michael, I mean if you're making a pasta sauce, you could put your finger in the sauce and it wouldn't burn it.
Hmm. Okay.
That is the way real Italian chefs cook.
Hmm.
All right? They cook slow, so not to destroy it. And also know the slower you cook, the sweeter the sauce. Now, if you cook garlic light, as the Spanish love to do, so it's just lightly golden, it's sweet. If you cook garlic in America, it's high heat and it's bitter.
Mm.
You should never have dark garlic. So anyhow, I gave them a perfect diet. I gave them exercise every day. I gave them de-stressing techniques, breathing and meditation and yoga, all these different, and journal writing. And I gave them all their supplements that were known to impact their health. All right, so one group had all that. Another group, I didn't change anything, except I questioned what they valued in life. Every single discussion we had, which was once a week for 3 hours, I focused upon their belief systems. What do you value? What do you wake up in the morning looking forward to? Have you tried at any point to deconstruct your own belief systems to see which of your beliefs are legitimate, which are not? Now, what was interesting is the average person did not have a hard time challenging their beliefs. The more educated a person was, the more successful they were, it became an almost impossibility. Architects, engineers, CPAs, medical doctors, lawyers, professors, and professors were the worst. They wouldn't question at all the value of their beliefs. And you understand their logic. Their logic is, why should I question that which has benefited me? I have mastered this. I have been accepted in this. I'm doing a good job. And I say, you're not understanding then the issue. What if something in your belief is wrong? How would you know? Your ego defends everything that you believe in. So I did a whole separate series for them about the value of belief and believing in something that is spiritual, loving, positive, and sustainable in a good way. Now, at the end of 6 months, we got all the blood workups in and all their daily diaries, and we filmed all this. And what was interesting is that they were virtually equal. So then the next time, I did them both together. And we had the highest rate of improvement that I've ever seen in my career. which told me that if a person smoked or drank or had coffee, and they, not necessarily good food, even bad food, but they had a really good attitude and really good belief system, and what they believed in was good, they would live as long as a person that had bad beliefs, wrong beliefs, was stressed to the max, because I'd seen this in my travels around the world. I spent 5 years, I traveled around the world for 5 years studying why people were living longer than they do in the United States. And it came back that they didn't have perfect diets, and they took no supplements, and they didn't have systematic exercise, but boy, did they have good belief systems. So then when I looked at so many Americans rushing into the health food store each day and grabbing their wheatgrass, but not even knowing the person or acknowledging the person making the wheatgrass, and angry and screaming on the phone while they were drinking their wheatgrass, or rushing in to do yoga, and I filmed this. I actually filmed down at the largest yoga center in America, wow, downtown. I filmed all these people, and it was a beautiful scene. Beautiful supine bodies, stretching, and beautiful rhythmic to the instruction. And then I had a camera placed out in the hall and down on the outside the building with a boom mic. So everything was perfect and serene in the yoga. When they came out, suddenly it was the cell phones and the conversations. By the time they hit the ground, they were yelling, "I want the blah, blah, blah." And so I went over to the owner of the studio and I said, "I had to see this for myself, that here in New York, people are willing to be in their zone doing their health thing for a few minutes, but it's not an integrated part of who they actually are. Who they really are is this out of control, angry person who is trying to position themselves to have more control and dominant in any situation, and then they de-stress themselves by coming in here. This is their opium. This is their marijuana. This is their cocaine. But it's not authentic. Not that yoga is not authentic. It is. But the people coming in to use it as a palliative, it is not. It's just a substitution. It's a more natural substitution, but it doesn't change who the person is. So then by change, I wanted authentic change. So put it all together. From that time on until this very last health support group, and I wanted to get Luann because she was there and filming. I was on the phone because I was out in Seattle on Wednesday, and I was listening, but I want her to tell you because she was there with Dr. Feldman and others as each person got up to say what had changed in their life. That protocol to change people who had really serious brain damage and psychological problems and physical problems, that was an integrated program. Change the attitude, change the values, change the beliefs, change the diet, change everything, and wow, you're a new human being. You can reverse the aging process. You can reverse DNA and oxidative stress damage. You can repair the DNA. Now, I presented my information at multiple international scientific conferences on anti-aging. I've been invited to London and Rome and all over the world to present my information. Not because I have a theory, not because I've written a popular book, but because I'm a scientist and I've done the actual work that no one else has. Dean Ornish did good work. He showed in his group, and I filmed it, and I was the only one filming it, that you could reverse atherosclerosis and arteriosclerosis by a vegetarian diet, exercise, and de-stressing. Well, we've done that, but gone far beyond that, helping reverse all kinds of mental conditions and slowing down the aging. You should see a person's face. You should see their skin tightening up, their nails turning pink and hard again instead of yellow and cracked, their skin getting tight instead of discolored with aging spots and wrinkled. Their digestion improving, their sleep improving, urinary incontinence improving. For women, their hormones rebalancing naturally. Their thinning skin no longer thinning. The mucous membranes in their vagina are no longer so thin that each time they'd have intercourse, they would cut themselves and end up with infections so they couldn't enjoy their partner's intimacy. We've changed that. Changed men so they didn't have to worry about having to take Viagra. They got their libido back. They got their youth back. They got their mojo back. That's what's in How to Live Forever. Chapter by chapter by chapter. You got 200 people in there talking about how they changed their aging process and changed disease. No more diabetes. The 70-year-old doctor, physician, orthodox physician who was on 7 meds, no longer on any meds. The woman with Alzheimer's, advanced Alzheimer's, Marie McGovern, no longer advanced Alzheimer's, living a normal life. Kenny, completely reversing multiple sclerosis. He was there on Wednesday night. He's in the book. And all these other hundreds of people, of which there were thousands who have changed. So can we change the aging process? Yes. but we can't do it superficially. We can't do it by taking one piece of the puzzle as if that's it. Oh, I took my antioxidants. Oh, I took my acai. No, it doesn't work that way. You have to do it all. But for those willing to do it all, the reward is there. And that way, a year from now, you too will have a frame-off restoration at your biochemical level. So it's not theory. I brought people up on stage before 7,000 scientists at the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine. I says, here's a young boy with autism reversed 100%, Jonathan Ortega. His mother and father, Bed-Stuy police officers, African-American. They were on stage with him. They said, my son didn't speak a word for 10 years. He was on 4 antipsychotic medications. He was going to be put into an institution. The doctor said, I have put him on a 5th medication or put him in an institution. He's too big to keep at home. He is violent. She heard me on the radio. She listened to what I had to say. I was giving some advice that day on WBAI about how to overcome seizures. She tried it at work. She brought him in. Today he is cured. And he is but one. I brought on a woman, Marie McGovern, in Washington, D.C., to some of the greatest scientists, anti-aging scientists and physicians in the world there. She told how she had reversed end-stage Alzheimer's. Is there another human being, anyone, can tell me that reversed end-stage Alzheimer's? If they have, good. I want to see that person. Marie is out there. This isn't secret. I take the people to the actual scientific conferences with their medical records, with their original medical reports, with their, where they were at the Rush Center at NYU, at Columbia Alzheimer's Center. I want people to know these are real people who've had real changes that orthodox medicine will never look at. They'll never trust this because it challenges the flawed paradigm they live by that they refuse to examine honestly and objectively to see how far off the mark they are. So the truth is in the actual cases, and all those are in the book. The diet, it's in the book. The nutrients per condition, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, dementia, depression, anxiety, macular degeneration, digestive problems, energy problems, all are there. And you'll see the charts from the actual study done by an independent medical biostatistician. I don't do my own charts. Unlike other people, I believe that if I did my charts and I did the study, I would be biasing my results. So I get someone I never see, don't know their name. All I know is I send a check. Because these are outside, independent medical biostatisticians who do the work, and I never have a word with them. They get all the raw data. So when they come back saying 97% improvement, 97, do you realize nothing in orthodox medicine can come close to that? They're in the teens at best, and we're at 97%. Improvement in energy, sleeping less and feeling better, sleeping better than ever, having no more this and no more, and it's just 36 different indices are examined. That's all in How to Live Forever, the book, in the video. Which foods you shouldn't eat and why, which beverages you shouldn't drink and why, which you should drink and why, which foods you should take and why, which nutrients you should take and why. So there's nothing like this. So that's what you get when you call WBAI today. The book will not be out until September 20th. That's a pub date. However, the publisher is printing an advanced edition for WBAI only. This is exclusive to BAI. You cannot get it in the bookstore. You can't get it online. It's exclusive to this station. I got the publisher to do this as a favor to this audience. Why wait 5 months when you can have this information, be using it now? So when you call and you support the station with a small donation, you're going to get a 600-page, the most definitive book yet written, with over 30 pages of scientific references from peer-reviewed literature. So every statement I make in the book, I support it with documentation. So there hasn't been a book like this. I'm aware of every book out there, and I'm aware of the work they have not done. They have not done the clinical studies. They have not done the biochemical work. They have not done the blood work up on 227 women with menopause that I was able to reverse their estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone levels. They were not able to stop hot flashes and night sweats. They were not able to get the women's energy back and cause them to lose weight and get their thyroid rebalanced. We did. So as strong as this statement is, it's backed up by fact, and our facts are always in the public domain for people to examine. It's all in How to Live Forever, the book, and in the DVD video special. Michael G., over to you.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Gary. We have some open lines, and just as soon as you say, Michael G., over to you, people are calling in right now for this book, the book and the DVD that's available as well. The package is for a pledge of $150. Make your calls now, 212-209-2950. The book by Gary Noll is available for a pledge, a nominal pledge of $90. Make your phone calls to this station right now, How to Live Forever, Ever, by Gary Noll, 212-209-2950. And the guest, Gary's guest, has been patiently standing by, and we're going to go right over to him in just a moment. Let's get these calls coming in right now so we can get on or back to programming. We're only going to take 5 minutes to do this, and then Gary will join his guests on the line. 212-209-2950. A lot of programming to bring to you, and only a little bit of pitching, and that's what we're doing right now. We're asking for your support, your financial support to this radio station, WBAI, for the program, The Gary Noll Show with Gary Noll. 212-209-2950. The calls are coming in right now. We have about 8 calls on the line, and we can march up to 15.
15 calls, 15 calls for 5 minutes, and we'll go to our guests, because the concept of giving 90% programming and 10% pitching has worked. Giving premiums at half the price that I give them on PBS has worked. Getting them out the door immediately, sometimes actually within 24 to 48 hours, has worked. And giving them insights that they wouldn't find anywhere else has worked. So we are honoring the audience. The audience is supporting this because they know these are valued and will help them change their life. And who doesn't want to live a longer life, a healthier life, and be more vibrant? I'm asking people, shouldn't every human being have the right to good health? Shouldn't we have the right to information that is avoided and denied in the mainstream media? Because you can't have it both ways. You can't say, on the one hand, have your child watch television Saturday morning. It doesn't matter what network. They're going to see foods and beverages that cause disease. This is not in debate. Every single person acknowledges that the foods that they're eating is junk, and the sugars, artificial sweeteners, artificial colors, preservatives are causing them to bounce off the wall, causing diabetes at an epidemic rate in children, adult diabetes, not juvenile diabetes, diabetes 1, but diabetes 2, causing arthritis and heart disease in 8-year-olds. So are we supposed then to assume that they're going to allow someone like myself or others in the field to go on Saturday morning and say, hold on a second, you just saw a 60-second spot. Here is a different way to give your child food and beverages that will actually help your child develop a natural immune system, natural immunity, that will help your child lose weight and have a nice percentage of lean muscle to body fat. They're not going to allow that. It's one-sided. They control it all. They control the media. They control the message. And Marshall McCune, the Canadian great philosopher, said the media is the message. So we don't have control, Michael, over the media.
No, we don't.
But we do have the opportunity to share with this audience the truth, and let them, when they see the truth and they've used it, there's nothing more powerful than to have a doubter get healthy and realize, I just got healthy because I believed in something I never thought had any value. Now I'm healthier. Now there's a likelihood you're going to go back to that, because the next step gets you even healthier. And now you say, gee whiz, every time I keep doing what this guy is saying, I get better. When am I going to wake up and say, okay, maybe this is really legitimate? Remember, our side has been on the defensive. Our side has been mocked and ridiculed and denigrated forever. Every single person, Linus Pauling, Nobel Prize winner, everybody was denigrated if they had a good idea, because it was a challenge to the power of the status quo. So now people are coming out and saying, let me try this. So let's get every call, because when they get the book and they start trying the food, and I give them the actual recipes, I give them breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, juices, teas, which juices, which nutrients, which foods, how to detoxify, a whole detoxification chapter, and then specific to conditions. Because I want you to benefit as the people in the clinical studies have benefited. Every clinical study we do is packed to the gills instantly when I announce it. They're all medically supervised. There's nothing about medicine in these studies. We never even talk about disease in the studies. It's all about lifestyle and behavior modification. And they work better than any. And you ought to see every week some scientists or physicians sitting in the back room watching. but they never apply it. So they're curious. People are curious, but they don't do it. So give a call. I want to get my guest on in the next 3 minutes. Okay. I'm going to have him be able to finish out this hour with information. Mm-hmm. But we need to get these calls coming in now.
Yes, we do.
15 lines.
Yes, we do. And we're not that far from that. We should be able to take care of this in another 2 minutes. 212-209-2950. Lifestyle and behavior modification. That's it. Lifestyle and behavior modification. Let's hear from you now. Let's start that process by making a call to WBAI. 212-209-2950. This is the Gary Null Show with Gary Null, usually on from 12 to 1 o'clock, but today we're going long. We're bringing you more information and more guests. We're asking you to support us at the $90 level for the book, How to Live Forever by Gary Null. As you just heard him outline some of what will be in that book, the DVD is available for a pledge of $75. Make your calls now. There are still a couple of lines available. Actually, there are 3 lines available, so there are 12 calls coming in right now. We want to thank the volunteers in the tally room. They're taking your calls. It just takes about 3 minutes. Do what you need to do, what you know is the right thing to do. Take care of the responsibility for yourself by making the call, ensuring that this radio station will be here, ensuring that this program will be here so that you have the access to the information day after day without any kind of commercial interruption, because that's the only way that we are able to bring this to you. Thank you so much for those calls coming in. Now, three more calls, and we're done for this hour. We're going straight back to programming. 212-209-2950. The Gary Null Show with Gary Null. How to Live Forever for a pledge. It's of a pledge of just $90. It's a book. The DVD, as I said, $75. The package, the both of them together, for a pledge of $150. You can pledge using Visa, MasterCard, or American Express. Make your calls now. Volunteers are standing by. Gary, we have 14 calls, so we need just one more person to call. You hear the phones continually ringing because every time there's a line that becomes available. Make your calls now. 212-209-2950 for these premiums, which are thank you gifts for supporting the radio station. Thank you gifts for supporting the Gary Null Show with Gary Null. Thank you so much. 212-209-2950. This is half of the price that you would get it on a PBS presentation. And this is a special advanced run specifically just for WBAI, for this audience. 212-209-2950. You won't be able to get this in the bookstores. It's not out for another 5 months, so you can't get it there. Only here at WBAI. 212-209-2950. We've gotten that 15th call, Gary. The calls are now, everyone is being engaged now on the radio. And this is the Gary Null Show with Gary Null. 15 calls coming in right now. 212-209-2950. Every moment a call drops away. So there is room for you. Don't be deterred by those phones ringing, by the continuous sound of those calls coming in right now, because every moment someone takes care of their responsibility, and we're hoping that you do the same as well, that you take care of your responsibility to look after your own self or someone that you love.
Let's give them the price and what they're getting. Do you have the table contents there in front of you?
No, but I'm going to make, by the end of this half an hour, I'll have it. I do not have that in front of me right now. The book is $90.
The book is $90, and by the way, this book is a humongous book.
Yeah.
This is the kind of book that you're not going to sit down and read cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's loaded with information. I don't believe in wasted verbiage, so it is packed. But most importantly, virtually, if you want to help someone with dementia, if your mom and dad have dementia or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's,